Tonight on The Download, from Donnie Trumpet and the social experiment, Donnie Trumpet. Barrington gymnast and now Cirque du Soleil dancer, Stacey Majera. And another installment of The Frying Pan with local innovator, Steve Gadlin. Now here's your host, a man who would make a great French clown, Justin Kaufman.
Now, not a French gymnast, but a French clown. If you've ever seen Cirque du Soleil, that's usually the big guy dressed like a baby. I can do that. Why not, right? I'd have like a bell in my hand. And then I'd sit in a lap of an audience member. I could do it.
Got it down.
I do.
You got the act right down.
The act's down. I mean, it's so formulaic. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight, whether you're driving to your weekend destination, maybe you're already there or just getting off work or clocking in. We got you tonight. I thank you for listening. And I'm honored to ride shotgun with you tonight. Great show. Wow. It's so, you know, it's really exciting to be. I kind of feel, you know, as people are on the road and they're starting to make their way somewhere, It feels good to be a part of that. It feels good to be on the radio.
I feel obligated to entertain while people are getting to where they really need to be.
I feel honored. I feel honored to be a part of that, you know, customary tradition, the idea that, you know, you might be going somewhere. Or even if you're not going somewhere, you're excited about the weekend that's about to happen. That's good. So I'm ready. We got a great show tonight, too. Coming up, Josh Mogerman's going to be here this hour. We'll talk about the huge NRDC study that just came out. It's groundbreaking. About all the people that are, I think it's something like, I have to look it up again because I have it in the prep, but it's a lot. It's over 18 million Americans
are
getting their water, drinking water, from sources that have had recent lead violations, like dangerous levels.
Lead violation.
No, sure, why not? But that's, and it's interesting because that doesn't include Flint, Michigan, because places like Flint, Michigan, and this was a story, I was just reading this huge article on CNN about it. They don't, for whatever reason, they fudge the numbers. They're not in the database. Flint was never in the database that they had lead violations. The first lead violation was what happened. So there are towns like Flint and there are towns here in the state of Illinois that are getting their water from places that are in lead violation. We just don't even know about it. So we're going to talk with Josh Mogerman about this study that just came out yesterday, the day before. We'll talk about it. It's a doozy. We've been talking about lead in our school water. We've been talking about lead in the park district water. But what about just in drinking water in general? We'll talk with Josh about that. Coming up at 8 o'clock, the big table. Donnie Trumpet is here tonight. How about that? I'm so excited. He's one of my favorite musicians. The Save Money Crew and Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment are some of the best Chicago musicians of our generation. Mm-hmm. We're not in the same generation. Kid's like 21 years old.
Well, I understand.
You know, but But if you remember the
this generation,
the Chance the Rapper featured record Surf, Chance is part of Social Experiment. So that was Sunday Candy.
Yeah, I love that song.
And all that stuff. That was Donnie Trumpet. Donnie Trumpet was part of Social Experiment. It was really his project. And he arranged it and put it together. And he goes on tour with Chance. And he's collaborated and he's all over Coloring Book, the new Chance the Rapper record.
We're going to actually talk to the girl who sings the hook on Sunday Candy, Jamila Woods.
Yeah, Jamila Woods next week.
Yeah.
Or a week.
A couple of weeks.
But Donnie's going to be opening up or headlining. They say it's co-headlining with The Roots at Taste of Chicago next week.
Now
how great is that?
That's going to be something to see because, you know, every time you see like them on like a late night show or something, it's like they put on a performance.
Great. I saw The Roots play at Metro probably about, I mean, honestly, 20 years ago. And it was an amazing show because what they did is they do this medley. It's almost, you know how they do the Justin Timberlake, Jimmy Fallon medley?
Mm-hmm.
Well, The Roots have been doing that as part of their act for a long time. So that's why it makes it easy to kind of adapt that kind of thing, especially from the music side. If you're not familiar, the Roots are the band, Jimmy Fallon's band on The Tonight Show. And so I saw that show at the Metro, and they did exactly that, like the history of hip-hop, essentially every 15 seconds changing the song. And it was amazing. It brought the house down there. And Donnie Trumpet and Social Experiment are going to be playing with the Roots at Taste of Chicago. I can't think of a better lineup. Those two bands back together in a beautiful night in Chicago. So that's going to be coming up. And Donnie Trumpet will be here at 8 o'clock. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Stacey Majera is a Barrington gymnast hero. Mm-hmm. I didn't say the words in the right air.
They were in sort of
She
in
is
the right
a
order.
Legendary gymnast in the town of Barrington, Illinois. And Stacey Majera, she won a couple of state titles. She was a part of the gymnast scene in the northwest suburbs. And she moved on in her career. She stayed with acrobatics and jumping up and down. And she is now touring with Cirque du Soleil. And she's coming back to Chicago for a homecoming with the new Cirque show that's going to be at the United Center coming up here in August. And so she'll be on to talk about, you know, making that transition from gymnastics to being a Cirque du Soleil acrobat. She was an acrobatic, or I guess they call it acrobat leader, team captain, acrobat captain. Yeah, right. Which I think has a ton of jumping jacks. That's just if I were an acrobat captain, it would be a lot of jumping jacks, and then we would do the pummel horse, just do that, and then we'd hit the showers. That would be it.
Have you done jumping jacks in a while?
I haven't. No,
they're hard.
Yeah.
I remember like playing football when I was a kid, and you'd start off doing jumping jacks. I could do 100. You know, granted, I'm older now, but still, like now, I find
that hard to believe. But go ahead.
I find that jumping, because we do them in my Orange Theory class. We'd have to do like call them squat jacks, because you can't just do a regular.
Well, maybe that's the problem. Like you're doing squat jacks, you're doing some jacked up, you know, John Cena style
of. But they're hard. Jumping jacks are hard. I can't imagine the other
thing that
rigorous.
Would be hard is like the rings. Have you ever done the rings where you try to pull yourself up and like do acrobats in the ring? No,
I can't hold them.
The only thing I ever had anything close to that was we had an aerobics class in high school, but it was led by the coach, like the old time gym teacher, and he was super into like mid to late 70s like Commodores music.
Yeah.
And so he'd put that stuff on, like, easy, like, Sunday morning, and we'd just be like, on a season. We'd go, like, real slow all the way down, like, stretching. And that was pretty much it. And I'm like, well, I guess I never have to do gymnastics. That was it. Also coming up tonight, Al Genie's going to be here, the Download's resident philosopher, Professor Al Genie. We're going to talk about beach reading, talk about some suggestions, his summer book bag. So if you're looking for something to read, Al's got some suggestions. And coming up at 10 o'clock, the return of the frying pan, local innovator, inventor, and entrepreneur. Steve Gadlin will be here at 10 o'clock, and we will be sort of workshopping his newest idea, an idea that he just texted me and said he's got a great one.
All right.
He really feels like having the week off last week, he was out of town, having the week off last week prepared him for this week.
Can't wait.
So that's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. You know what I had to do today? If you don't mind,
let me guess.
A quick story. You want to guess?
Yeah, let me guess.
You're not going
to
get this.
You had to get a new city sticker.
No. I was smart last time I did it. I got the 2-year deal. Doesn't sound like me, I know, but I did it.
Tumor guy. You had to go to the dentist?
No, I did that 2 days ago.
And you...
My dentist, by the way, Dr. Deaver. He asked me, who's the one guy that you'd like to interview, right? And I said, well, the one guy we've had a hard time getting is Chance the Rapper, right? I'd love to get him on. He goes, consider it done.
What?
I go, do you know him? He's like, no, but I want to see if I can do it for you.
Wow.
That's what he said. I was like, all right. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see if that makes
sense. Wouldn't that be great if your dentist books Chance the Rapper? That would be incredible.
Right. I think that's pretty notable. I think that's good. No, you got one more. You have one more. You got one more. What do you think?
You went swimming.
No.
It's a little too cold.
I went through the lost and found at my son's school. Which, on a day like today, when the school is empty and there's nobody in the school anymore, is a tremendous feat. So we got in because on the last day of school, my son forgot his lunch bag. This is kind of a big deal. So there's a reason, there's a story behind this. So he forgot it, and we had to go through. So there's nothing worse. I mean, I had to wash my hands like 10 times going through, like, old lunch bags and jackets and shirts and just stuff that you're like, oh, there's some sort of bug in this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, I was so frustrated. But I will say that, you know, one of the reasons we're looking for it is that his mom, she writes him little notes, right? There's a great little thing that she does. So he's in third grade, and every day he opens his lunch, and there's a nice note that says, "Have a great day," or "Good luck on the spelling test." It's been a great tradition for
us. Sweet.
Mm-hmm. 3 years, right? Well, the final day's note is important because there's a whole collection of them. He lost the lunch bag, right? So I'm the one who's got to go. You know, I'm the one who's got to go back and find it. So I'm going through a bunch of stuff I can't find. We don't find it.
Oh, no.
I know. And, you know, my son is quiet. We get home. He runs into his room. He shuts the door. I listen. He's whimpering. He's crying.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Feels bad.
He feels bad. And that's what I was trying to figure out, Pete. I was trying to figure out, does he feel bad because is he super emotional about losing the note, or is he mad because his mom is mad?
He's probably mad at, like, disappointing the parents.
Yeah, because she put a lot of time into it. I mean, it was something she told me that there were 6 drafts.
Oh my
of
Lord.
The final note. That's where I'm like, okay, I think we're putting too much pressure on this note. And she was disappointed when the note didn't come back, right? So I told him this is what I did as a parent as I sat down with him. I said, "You read the note, right? Do you remember what it said? That it was the last day of school and that you were loved. So it'll be forever with you. You know, the note is disposable."
Mm-hmm.
"You may forget the words, but you're not going to forget the sentiment." And he kind of bucked up a little bit.
Yeah,
and he was like, okay.
Nice.
And I gave him a hug, and then I told him to clean his room because it was a mess. But that's what I had to do today. Like, I had to have a parenting moment.
That's a good moment. That's a good learning moment.
Yeah, right? I thought about it too.
Do you say
day.
Like don't lose stuff though? Try not to lose stuff.
Try not to lose stuff, but you lost this big deal. That's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
And I thought about the idea of it being disposable, and we live in this culture where everything's disposable. And I think about this show and this radio show, and that's kind of the concept of it that put out there. And then there's a next one, and a next one, and a next one, and a next one. And how sometimes, you know, we get this unbelievable opportunity to archive it. A lot of radio people in our business didn't get that chance 20 years ago. A lot of the WGN heroes, the Bob Collins and the Wally Phillips, they didn't get a chance to have a website that you can go back and listen again. We have that function. So I just made me think about, you know, the disposable nature of art and how it's changed and how it's not the actual product, but the sentiment that, you know, you take with you. So I learned something today. And I learned that my son's room is really dirty.
That's normal, right?
News, weather, and traffic tonight with Don Norton. I called him John Norton at the beginning. I thought it was I thought it was like your cousin, Don.
It's one of the best and better things I've been called. John.
Well, Jeff was like, John Norton's in it, and I'm like, oh, a new guy. And then I said, John Norton. I looked up. I hear your voice. I'm like, well, no, that's Don.
My brother's name is John. He's probably listening.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I didn't know I was supposed to be there.
Well, news, weather, and traffic with Don Norton tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We've got a great show tonight. Let's get it started with the carryout. This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The June gun violence numbers are out. We're almost double last year's numbers. And June beat out New York and Los Angeles shootings combined. Hey, second city, no more. This, of course, is a chilling reminder that the 4th of July weekend is here. The last few years have been pretty brutal when it comes to shootings at this time. Superintendent Eddie Johnson said he is sick and tired of the violence, which I guess is good. It's better than violence is bad, but there's still room for it. It's thought to be the first ever bike-sharing death. A woman was killed today on the Northwest Side when she was using a Divvy bike. She was hit by a flatbed truck. It's a terrible story for sure, but surprising that this was the first Divvy death ever, like, from around the entire country. That's pretty amazing. Sad, though. A new crime wave is hitting Michigan Avenue by Millennium Park. Car muggings. Guys come up to your car, say they're selling something, and then assault you and take your phone slash wallet. This has happened a few times now in broad daylight. When Reach for Common Expressway ramp, panhandlers were like, seriously? You know how hard it is to just get a quarter? I mean, they don't even roll down their window. Now forget it. That's it. I'm going home. President Obama advisor and former CTA board member Valerie Jarrett was interviewed today, and when pressed, wouldn't rule out a political career running for office. After she leaves the White House, of course. Wait, where have I heard this before? Someone who worked in the Obama White House and came back to Chicago. You know what? If she wants to get serious about running for higher office, she should just take like 2 to 3 years to be an investment banker. I mean, that just seems to be the prereq here in Illinois. A thick green guacamole-like substance is gucking up the shores of Florida this week. When asked for comment, Chipotle was like, hey, we're on it. We've rented a bunch of trucks and we're making more chips. But nobody really knows what it is. My guess, spoiled party foam from a rave in the Bahamas. Or the shrimp and the snails, they're on strike. I will not clean this ocean until I get to $15 an hour. I don't know if that was my snail or my shrimp. Use your imagination. In grosser news, closer to home, an E. coli breakout at a restaurant on 26th Street in Chicago has been reported. The restaurant voluntarily closed while dealing with the outbreak. That's sort of like the college basketball program punishing themselves before the NCAA can. No, you're still going to get punished. In the future, use clean towels. It's the 4th of July weekend, and that means big blockbusters will hit the movie theaters. You know, like Tarzan. Seriously? Independence Day 2 was last week, and DC Comics Suicide Squad's later this month. I always thought this was the weekend for big movies. And Tarzan, really, Tarzan, the movie that just keeps getting made. I mean, if you were going to make an argument for the lack of creativity in Hollywood, this would be the story. I guess we just love watching hot dudes grunt. Come on. In weather, nice weekend. Little cool, little cloudy. Might be good. Who knows? In sports, not a done deal yet, but Joakim Noah should be a Knickerbocker by the end of the weekend. But that's okay for Bulls fans. We're just going to move on and get Jeremy Lin or Evan Turner or Andre Drummond or Chandler Parsons. Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. All signed today. I know, let's trade for O.J. Mayo. Everybody loves O.J. Mayo. Oh, he's suspended out of the league for 2 years because of a drug offense. But can he still practice? We'll take a practice guy. Good news for the Blackhawks. Defenseman Brian Campbell's back. He said earlier this week that he didn't care about money. He just wanted to come play in Chicago again. Campbell, of course, was part of the 2010 Stanley Cup winning Blackhawks. And the Hawks were like, cha-ching, sold, you're in. This is good news since the Hawks have been mostly about who's not coming back this offseason. Also, Campbell's nickname, Soup. And then you got Panarin, Bread, Soup and Bread. You know, they could get a deal with, like, Olive Garden or maybe find another player who has the nickname Unlimited or Bottomless, although that'd be the worst hockey nickname of all time. The Cubs lost game one last night of the NLCS rematch with the New York Mets, but have no fear. They got three more games to go this weekend, although they do face Jacob deGrom tonight. But that's okay because we got Jason Hamill going. Let's tee it up. Tonight, the White Sox are in Houston. Can they keep the momentum going? Also, great tidbit here. Rookie shortstop Tim Anderson walked for the first time in his career yesterday. He was up 82 times. First walk. And he's fast, too. In WNBA news, Chicago Sky point guard Cappy Poindexter is the first player to have her own emoji. So go ahead and cross that off the old bucket list. I already have my own emoji. It's the yellow bald one with the really big eyes. You know that one that you use all the time? That's me. So you're really saying Justin Kaufman, Justin Kaufman, Justin Kaufman, Justin Kaufman, Justin Kaufman. And finally tonight, Soldier Field is buzzing because the rock band Guns N' Roses is going to hit the stage soon. This is the official reunion tour featuring the original members Slash, Duff, and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Hey, he looks good in a bandana. I can't wait for the 35-minute rendition of Patience. Patience. Yeah, come on, everybody, and I'll lend our patience. Yeah, that's the carry out for July 1st, 2016. Hey, have a great 4th of July. Bob Pops for everyone.
We should check in throughout the night for the Guns N' Roses show, and I guarantee they're still doing Patience.
That's three quarters of the show. All right, Josh Mogerman's coming up with a new NRDC survey report that says our lead in the water is not a good thing. That's coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Don Norton?
Yes, sir.
How are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Do you have any big plans for the weekend? Are you a fireworks guy? Are you going to go see some fireworks?
No. Well, let's see. Yeah, I always get confused because sometimes they're on the 3rd and sometimes they're on the 4th. Right. You know, I'll see what I can catch. I want to do a little boating downstate, float around on a pontoon for a little while.
Nice.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
All right. Don, we got any room for two more, me and Pete?
You have to bring some food.
Well, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah. drinks will be provided, though.
All right, good. All right. Well, we'll look into that. We'll see what kind of food we can find. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Donnie Trumpet. One of the great young Chicago performers here in town. He's playing Taste of Chicago, headlining with The Roots, Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment. Tremendous record, Surf, which is really sort of up there with some of the most sort of iconic Chicago albums to date. I mean, it was only last year, but, I mean, the millions and millions of downloads on iTunes, a tremendous achievement for young musicians here in town. So we'll talk with Donnie Trumpet coming up at the big table. Also tonight, Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. Big night for him. He said he's got the idea. We're excited when we hear Steve, when he's excited. The local entrepreneur who won on Shark Tank with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He's got a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings his new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to the download to workshop. He's got a pretty, I would say, less than stellar track record. He hasn't done very well. But he says tonight's different, so we'll see. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, we put a lot of emphasis on lead testing in our schools. We even had Monica Eng on last week talking about testing for lead at our neighborhood parks in advance of the Park District camp, which starts next week. But a new report out by the NRDC questions whether or not we're taking this issue seriously. The report is called What's in Your Water? Flint and Beyond. And the groundbreaking report says that over 18 million Americans get their water from sources that have had recent lead violations. And the problem could be much worse, since places like Flint, Michigan, don't even show up with lead violations in the system. That's not good. Joining me now is Josh Mogerman. He's a National Media Director for Natural Resources Defense Council, the guest here on The Download. Josh, good to see you.
Thanks for having me on, Justin.
Hold on one second. I don't know why you're not showing up there, but let's go. All right, Josh, this is a report. Obviously, we've had so much conversation about lead in our water. What came out of this report that is different than what we've sort of been inundated with, you know, lead in the water when it comes to Flint, Michigan and beyond?
Well, I think Americans just assume that the water coming out of their tap is safe and it's clean and they should be drinking it. We're a first world country. We've got this amazing infrastructure. And, you know, we dug into EPA data and what we found is that more often than not, you shouldn't be so sure of that. So like you said, 18 million Americans are getting water from services that had lead violations last year alone. We're talking just about 2015.
Right.
And
that doesn't necessarily mean that they have lead in the water or that they have lead poisoning. This just means that they are coming from systems in which there were lead violations.
That's exactly right. That means that they are not doing everything that the law requires to protect you and me from contamination from lead. And so that can be high levels of lead. That can also be not monitoring to make sure that there isn't lead in the water. That can also be making sure that they have all the chemicals in place to protect the pipes that move through or that the water moves through. And that is obviously where the problem came up in Flint. So this is a serious thing. We're talking about 5,000 water systems across the country.
One of the things that came out of the lead in Flint story was this idea that, well, you know, they moved to a different water supply and that supply was tainted and they should have known better and they did it to cost cut, you know, that kind of thing. And it became almost a political story. But what this report really calls out is that it doesn't matter if you're switching water services or doing things like what happened in the state of Michigan. This is a prevalent problem and a problem that is kind of going unnoticed around the entire country.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so Flint is a nightmare. Flint is a situation that stands on its own that is utterly horrific. A town of 100,000 people, not only being given water that is contaminated with lead, but then being told, no, there's not a problem when they raise concerns. So that by no means do we want to imply that Flint is happening everywhere. What we are saying, though, is there are significant infrastructure problems in this country, and we're not doing everything we need to do to protect people from this issue. We're not making sure that our systems are up to date, that we're monitoring that, and that when there are problems, that we're both looking for them and making sure people know that. You know, the big number we talked about was 18 million people. The smaller number that I think is in some ways a lot more frightening is that of those millions of people, there are 1,000 water systems that serve 3.9 million Americans that did show high lead levels of 15 parts per billion at least 10% of the time that they're tested. That means that that meets the threshold that EPA says, whoa, you've got a problem, you need to do something about that.
Is the EPA doing that? Are they saying, whoa, there's a problem? I mean, are you – obviously you're doing this, you're taking independent or data that has been sort of parsed by the EPA. Is the system here in this country equipped to be able to handle – a situation when they do have the numbers, the staggering numbers that you just mentioned?
So there's two things here. So the first one is these are just the problems that are reported. You mentioned Flint. Flint doesn't show up in this data. And one of the things that we looked at and that we talk about in this report is that there are plenty of places where they're not looking for the problems. They're gaming the system. And, you know, one of those places where that accusation has been made is here in Chicago. In Chicago, the water testing is done in 50 homes, predominantly on the northwest side of the city, that are owned or occupied by water department staffers. That isn't necessarily representative of the rest of the city. I live on the near south side. Most of the houses around me are more than a century old. That's different infrastructure. So that's one problem. One is are we actually looking for the problem? Because if the alarm bell is raised, it costs the city a lot of money to deal with those things. There's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through, and there are plenty of cities where they may be looking in places where they know they don't have a problem.
So right, and that's something that's where, you know, governments get involved and politics get involved, because a water department comes back and says, yeah, we do have to change the infrastructure in Chicago. It's a lot of money.
That's
right.
And
so there is this, and this is interesting in Chicago, because there has been a political pressure to retrofit, to outfit with new pipes, to try and push things further, you know, just for the idea of trying to double up that speed to get it done, but not necessarily to stop, look, and see if we have the same problem that's affecting a lot of the Rust Belt, a lot of the Midwest towns that are similar to Chicago.
And just to be clear, The investment that we're making in the city of Chicago is a good thing. It's important. We have to stay on top of that. You get into bigger problems if you're not making that investment. But the EPA in 2013 sent the city a report expressing a little bit of concern about the way we do this. And so we're spending a lot of money. We're replacing miles and miles of water infrastructure every year. But when they get to the systems under the street in front of your house, they cut the lead line or the whatever that line is that feeds your house from the street. More often than not in Chicago, that is a lead line. And that's where the concerns are. Because when you reattach that line to the new infrastructure in the street, you're disturbing that lead line. And the EPA has sent studies that say that you have the potential to have localized lead spikes that last for up to 6 months in those neighborhoods, in those homes.
And you've heard so much about, you know, yes, you know, a lot of the infrastructure is a century old, or my house is old. You know, I think more people are concerned when they have a house that may have been even built in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. But even if, you know, the house I live in was built in 2004 and it's like, well, it's brand new, everything's good, you're still not dealing with, it's not fully you know, lead free, because the way that the street connects to your house has yet to be upgraded.
If your house was built before 1986, there's a very good chance that that line that connects your house to the street was a lead service line. It may have been replaced, it might not. And if you have concerns, you should be calling 311 and having the city come and test your water to make sure there's not a problem. But Chicago, it's been said that Chicago probably has more lead lines than any other city in the nation. We continued putting in lead lines longer than a lot of other cities. And, you know, look, there are plenty of other places in this region that have looked at this problem and said, we can't do this anymore. If you look at Madison, if you look at Lansing, those are cities where they actually went in and they dug up all of the lead service lines. And that's something that I think we need to be seriously looking at all over the country, and particularly here in Chicago.
There's a good price tag to that. Josh Mogerman is the National Media Director for the National Resources Defense Council. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation about the new NRDC report, What's in Your Water, Flint and Beyond. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. In studio with me, Josh Mogerman. He's the National Media Director for the National Resources Defense Council. Their new study, What's in Your Water, Flint and Beyond, really looks at a lot of the water sources and their trouble with recent lead violations. And it's not just here in Illinois. It's all around the country. But it really is an eye-opening, sort of groundbreaking report that not only are we're having almost an epidemic when it comes to lead in our water, but a lot of it is unreported. And that's really the part that we're scratching our head about. Josh, we talked about Chicago, and we'll continue to that conversation, but it's not just the city of Chicago. In the state of Illinois, there are some hotspots.
Yeah, there are some significant hotspots where there have been real problems. We haven't had a lot of reported problems in Chicago. We have some concerns. But you do have a significant problem in Galesburg, Illinois. There have been issues that have been raised in Berwyn, in North Dundee. So there are plenty of places in Illinois where we have to be paying a lot of attention.
Right. When you say it's not reported, when you say issues are raised, what does that mean? I mean, is that where people have said, I think I have lead in my water and it's been tested? Is that like the same thing we mentioned right before the break?
Well, this goes back to that issue of what's a violation. So again, the main takeaway from this is 18 million people are getting lead from systems that had a lead violation last year in 2015. Those violations might be really high levels of lead. We know that in the case of about 3.9 million people, that's what it was. In other cases, they're not monitoring, they're not doing what they need to do to ensure there isn't corrosion of the pipes, which invites having lead into the water, or they're not sharing the information that they have with their testing with people in the community. Most of those are not things that we have concerns about in Chicago, that they do a good job of testing. Or reporting the tests, it's that issue of where we're testing
right. And
how frequently.
Well, there's some political pressure when it comes to lead in the water, lead in anything, your schools, your paint, whatever it might be. You know, there has been such a race to be efficient because budgets have shrunk and obviously money is tight. We're seeing with property taxes going up here. And there has been a push to make sure that the testing is as quote unquote efficient as possible, that the retrofitting is efficient as possible. Does that, when you're talking about money drying up, but also a political push to be as expedient and efficient as possible, does that also cause trouble when we sort of skip over testing or skip over some of the trouble spots because it's just not politically good?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. The city of Chicago lives up to the letter of the law. We think they need to be doing things very differently. I think lots of people do. You've seen plenty of reporting here from the Trib. Monica Eng, mm-hmm. I think, has done a great job, as you noted. But nobody wants to say water in my town is poison. That's not good for economic development. That's not good for tourism. That's not good for anything. So there is not incentive for cities to be looking closely and trying to find a problem. They've got enough problems already up in City
right.
Hall. So trying to find another one that is,
they're not going to put money into finding a problem.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. They're doing what the law says they absolutely need to do. And that points to a problem with the law. We need to fix the law and we need to give it some teeth. One of the other things that comes out of this report is that we documented that nearly 90% of the violations that we talked about, those 18 million violations, face no formal enforcement action. So the EPA and the federal government didn't force the city to do anything
or
after
any,
these things
Oh, that's
up.
Interesting. So they just note it.
That it's noted, and that's it. And in all of those, you know, in all of those cases, again, we're talking about 5,000 services in Chicago. Only 3% of them faced any sort of a penalty. So, you know, there's no cop on this beat. That's the problem.
You know, I think about it in the way that lead has been removed from other services. You know, we see that with lead paint and in taking even thinking outside of lead, asbestos is a good example, where our society kind of moved in a direction to say this, we have identified this being a problem. We need to eradicate it. We're going to get rid of it. And there became not only a governmental sort of approach to it, but also a consumer-based report. You know, you don't buy a house with asbestos. You don't buy lead paint. You know, they stop selling that stuff. Are there ways in which lead and water can see the same thing happen as some of those things happened in the last couple decades?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that you brought up was cost, and that's always a concern. Whenever you have these environmental problems, it's very hard to show a return on investment. When you look at one of the biggest breakthroughs I think we've seen in this country and globally, when we took lead out of gasoline,
right,
people were literally breathing lead from exhausting cars going in front of their homes and their offices and their schools every day. And if you look at crime statistics, they can't prove a direct correlation, but it really looks closely. The huge drop in crime that we have had in the last few decades correlates really, really closely to with what the impacts you would expect from taking lead out of gasoline. We can and should be doing the same sort of a thing with water. The opportunity is it's not just dealing with this huge societal problem. It's not just protecting our kids, but we're also creating jobs. You know, one of the critiques that we've been hearing of the slow recovery is that we've focused on all of these financial tools. We didn't actually put people to work. This puts people to work.
Right.
If you spend the next three decades pulling out all these lead service lines, you're creating jobs, you're doing, you know, this is the sort of thing that the stimulus program should have done
well,
for the economy a long
is
time
Is it going
ago.
To be the kind of thing that the future president is going to need to go further than what they've done with guidelines at the EPA, but to create sort of an initiative or a stimulus package or something that says to all the towns out there and all the cities that are dealing with this or their infrastructure is crumbling in a way that it actually can be hazardous to the health of your citizens. Are we going to see more money coming from the federal governments? Because I can't see the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, the city of Berwyn having the funds to be able to rip pipes up and replace them.
Yeah, this is something that requires every level of government. This is a federal fix. This is a state fix. This is a local fix. And it has a real price tag to it. This is something that if we removed all of the lead service lines across the country, it's looking at something in the neighborhood of nearly $1 trillion over a quarter century. I mean,
yeah.
you don't do this tomorrow. You
right.
don't do this overnight. But there's plenty that we can and should be doing that helps to tee that up right now. And first and foremost, it's let's fix the rules that protect the public from this problem. So we haven't updated the lead and copper rule, which is part of the Clean Water Act, in 25 years. It is time to give that law some teeth. So that we do have a cop on the beat, so that when we know that there's a problem, we're actually forcing some action to safeguard the public. Let's go ahead and take care of the lead in the most vulnerable of our communities, the communities where we know that there are lead problems. Let's start there. That's why in this report, the number one ask that we have is let's start by fixing Flint. You know, we have a town of 100,000 people.
Show that it can be done.
Yeah, and this is a town that everybody recognizes is full of aggrieved parties, people that did not deserve this. Let's start there. Let's show it can be done. Let's put the fix in. They're fighting in D.C. over this. You know, there are a couple of different packages to bring a lot of money to go to Flint to pull the lead out and to bring the other things that are necessary once you dose the town.
It's interesting.
100,000.
I mean, it's essentially a precedent. You know, I
Absolutely.
Mean, how Flint is dealt with at the federal level, and there will be some sort of stimulus package. When that happens, that will be the precedent to how many towns are going to be able to get federal help. I'm interested, you know, there's so many different things, and you guys at the NRDC have, you know, you're protecting the environment, and you're going to have certain parties, you know, when you're talking about other issues, whether it be, you know, coal or different kinds of energy, you'll have people who have strong lobbies that say, hey, no, we don't want to get rid of this. We don't want to, you know, there's more of a fight. there isn't a fight over lead. There's no, is there a lead industry that's like, no, we're not going to do this. Lead is important to every single, you know, citizen of the United States of America. There isn't. So at some point, all parties, political, all politics aside, this is something that, you know, has to be done at some point to improve our infrastructure.
That's what's so vexing about this. All the folks who have a dog in this fight agree. The federal government agrees we need to do better. The unions want to do this. There are real opportunities to get folks up and working. The groups that oversee the water utilities around the country all agree it's time for us to get the lead out. It's a question of finding the resources to do it.
The new report is called What's in Your Water, Flint and Beyond. Josh Mogerman is the National Media Director for the National Resources Defense Council. They're the ones who put out the report. Josh, good to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up tonight in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Stacey Majerus. She is a award. I mean, she won state. I think it was 5 or 6 times as a gymnast at Barrington High School. And she took that career. She went to UIC, and after UIC, she's like, "Well, what am I going to do with this?" And she auditioned for Cirque du Soleil, and she became an acrobat, a gymnast at Cirque du Soleil. And she's been touring the country. She's actually on stage in Vegas right now. And she is part of the new show, the new Cirque du Soleil show that's going to be at the United Center this summer in August. And so it's sort of like a homecoming for her to come back here to the Chicago area and do what she did. And so I'm sure there'll be a huge Barrington contingency out at the United Center this summer. But we'll talk to her coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, this Wednesday, July 6th, the Taste of Chicago gets underway. And that means great food and great music. Wednesday, the Taste will welcome Philadelphia supergroup The Roots. Everybody loves The Roots, right? But in Chicago, the anticipation may be for the opening band, Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment. Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment is the band behind the mega album Surf that was put out in 2015. The music was written and arranged by the Social Experiment, which also includes Chance the Rapper. The album included several top-flight musicians like Busta Rhymes, Big Sean, Janelle Monáe, Erykah Badu, and so many others. And the tracks on that record have been downloaded on iTunes over 10 million times and counting. And if you hear Chance talk about it, he says it's really Donnie Trumpet's vision that made that record happen. Trumpet has just collaborated with Chance on his latest album, Coloring Book. Donnie Trumpet has been making music for a couple years now, first with his band Kids These Days, and then solo, and now with the Social Experiment. He's a kid from Chicago who went to Whitney Young High School. Not bad, from the high school band to headlining at the Taste of Chicago. Donnie Trumpet, welcome to the download.
Hey, bow, 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 bow. It's good to be here. What's up? What's up?
Thanks
hey,
for being here.
People outside, that's kind of funny that you all can see me. What's up, guys? Hey.
So, talk about, you know, as I said, from the high school band at Whitney Young to playing Taste of Chicago. What does it mean to you to play Taste of Chicago?
Man, it means everything. I was a part of Gallery 37 and did a lot of rehearsing and learning there with a bunch of great teachers, Gerard Harris, and we learned a lot playing right next to the stage I'm going to be playing at Taste of Chicago. I mean, it's crazy, man. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've, you know, been downtown, like been to festivals downtown. And, man, it's just it's amazing.
When you have a gig like that, when you have such a big Chicago gig and you're a Chicago kid, born and raised here, Rogers
yes,
Park.
Sir.
So is it mean something for Taste of Chicago? The idea, I mean, is this bigger
Definitely.
Than playing like any other gig in Chicago? I mean, it's just Taste of Chicago.
I've seen Stevie Wonder at the Taste of Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, I never was, like, all the way in or, like, right next to the stage or anything, but I was, you know, out in the field and going through the festival buying my funnel cakes and stuff and watching Stevie Wonder. I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's such an incredible, thing to happen for free for people, to for the whole city to come to one central location and see Stevie Wonder. I mean, come on, you know, that's incredible.
When you're getting ready for a gig at the Taste of Chicago, a big gig like this that means something, do you change up your act? Do you put something together? I mean, you guys have been kind of touting surprises as it goes, but I mean, for you and the social experiment, is the idea that, you know, you've got to put your best show forward?
I think we always feel like that. You know, I feel like when we're playing behind Chance at his shows, we are trying to make that show the best we can make it for Chance, because that's Chance's show. And there's a lot of people involved that are also in Chance's band. I don't want to say too much about the personnel, but there'll definitely be some overlap, and there'll definitely be some new faces. And I'm just excited. I'm just excited to showcase everybody and showcase this music, because we haven't played a lot of shows that were necessarily surf shows, right, or Donnie right. Trumpet shows. We did a kind of semi-secret show in New York City, but that was a really long time ago. So I'm super excited that this is in Chicago at a big festival, like a staple of Chicago's culture, and it's a great feeling.
Well, you guys played Pitchfork last year. I saw that show. And the way that surf was kind of introduced was, in the middle, there's a point where you come out with the trumpet, and you got like almost like a suit on. You got a certain vibe to you.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But it is almost a departure from Chance's show. The background band kind of pops out, and then he continues with his show. So talk about the difference of a Donnie Trumpet and Social Experiment show.
Yeah, well, I think as musicians and creative people that collaborate with other people, you know, it's important to have that give and take. So to know when it is appropriate to be really, really loud and really, really in your face and wearing a conductor suit and standing in front of all these people, like, you know, with my arms out. And then also when it's time to be in the background and to play my parts the best I can, you know, at all those moments and every moment in between, and not really... You know, it's such a blessing to wake up and play music. Like, I don't want to ever take any of those notes for granted. You know, I don't want to half-ass any situation, or, you know, I don't want to timidly approach playing in anybody's band. You know, recently I played on a song with Jamila Woods, who's a great friend of mine and a great Chicago person and staple of the community in Chicago, and even in her show, I played one song, but I was at rehearsal the day before, and I was making sure I knew my parts, and I was making sure I was vibing with the band who I'd never played before. You know, I want that type of experience when I make music with people, when I'm performing with people, when I'm performing my music that means so much to me. I want people to experience that in the way I experience it, and all these amazing people coming to light, you know, and having their moment to shine.
It's interesting because, you know, as a musician and we'll talk about collaboration. We'll also talk about, you know, music with vocals and music without, and you've sort of gone back and forth with that as a collaborator and as a writer. But talk about the idea of playing and sort of mastering the art of playing in a quote unquote backup band. Like the idea of being on stage and, like you just mentioned, like finding your spots and being able to collaborate with the performers on stage. But a lot of what you do and what the Social Experiment does and the backing band that is for Chance, it is about, you know, sort of supporting the artists who are in front of you.
Definitely. I think it comes from the many different types of scenarios I've played trumpet in. So I've played trumpet in a big band where my role is to blend with all these other people, or in an orchestra, which is a much bigger job and many more people to blend with. I've played in salsa bands where it's just me and one other trumpet player, and we have to, you know, play super, super high, super loud, super fast the whole night and not miss. You know what I mean? Like, there's people dancing. You better not miss. So I think it comes from how I was talking about the give and take and feeling your place out. So I don't really approach the playing trumpet in Chance's band the way a trumpet player would necessarily approach that. I have a pedal, and I have like a sound that I've established live. And I also, I try and approach it more like a singer or an electric guitar, like the big electric guitar solo that happens in that band that you love that singer in, you know. That guitar solo is me, you know.
Right.
It's just me and Greg and Peter up there. So it's me, you know, taking on that role as Anthony Hamilton behind D'Angelo, or as or as a lot of the greats have done, backgrounds and been supporting roles and supporting casts.
It's amazing.
John
to hear
Coltrane
you say
and
that.
Miles Davis.
Yeah,
band,
right, right.
Know?
Well, let's talk about. We'll take a quick break here and we'll talk about the trumpet. But cool. it's amazing and it's sort of heartwarming to hear it that way because your music does. The trumpet does play that role on Surf. It almost is the electric guitar. There, you know, that is the part that everybody is picking out of the music because it is so vibrant. It's so different. Mm. Donnie Trumpet's my guest tonight. Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment are going to be at the Taste of Chicago, headlining with The Roots on Wednesday night. Obviously, Donnie Trumpet and Social Experiment, the guys behind Surf. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. That's the music of Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment. Busta Rhymes coming in right there.
Woo!
Slip slide. Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment are playing at the Taste of Chicago on Wednesday night. They're co-headlining with The Roots. Of course, the music we're listening to here, it was from the album Surf in 2015. Donnie Trumpet, Chicago kid, who is a trumpet player. He also collaborated and was featured on the new Chance record, Coloring Book. Donnie, talk about the trumpet. You know, that's a difficult, obviously, instrument. But
yes.
But it's also an instrument that is almost always sort of, you know, associated with jazz music.
Yeah, well, I think the trumpet is associated with a lot of different types of music, which is actually a big reason why I feel it describes me and my sound and my city and all of those things kind of combined. But trumpet wasn't my first instrument. I started playing Latin percussion, mostly like congas and timbales, and I was playing in my dad's after-school Latin jazz band. And I thought I was super cool because I was, like, the only kindergartner, you know, and there was, like, really pretty girls that were in, like, you know, 7th and 8th grade. And I was, like, you know, hanging out after school and with my dad and playing all this music. And we played shows at the school. So anyways, that was at Inter-American. And then I switched schools in 6th grade to Little Lincoln or Lincoln Elementary, but everybody calls it Little Lincoln. Because it's right next to Lincoln Park High School. But I switched schools, and they have this amazing music program run by Marty Kalis and Mr. Greenhouse, Marshall Greenhouse. And I vividly remember the first day walking into the school to pick my instrument. And obviously I said I want to play drums because I was already a drummer.
Right.
Or I thought I was a drummer. And he said, well, there's too many drummers, so you can't be a drummer. And I said, okay, well, I'll play saxophone because I thought saxophone's pretty cool.
Sure.
You know, why not? And he was like, no, there's too many saxophonists. You got to pick something else. So
it's between the flute and the trumpet. You got to pick one, right?
Or like French horn or, you know, something like that. Shouts out to French horn. But no, my dad actually suggested that I play the trumpet. And I said, cool, let's give it a try. And that night he played me In a Silent Way by Miles Davis. And I just thought, wow, I've never heard a trumpet like that. You know, like I realized later in life how much music had trumpet in it that I was already influenced
right.
by. All the Stevie Wonder records and James Brown records and even like Beatles records and all the Latin music that I've grown up listening to. The trumpet is an integral part of all those sounds. And I never would just pick that out just, you know, before I played the instrument or, like, studied the instrument or studied how hard some of that music is.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, it's hard music, man.
So, the trumpet was the instrument in sixth grade. And then, you know, you start out by learning these, like, kind of infantile melodies and stuff, you know, like Twinkle Twinkle or Hot Cross Buns. That was a hot number in sixth grade. elementary school band. And I kind of just hated all that music. And I wanted to play the music that I wanted to listen to. I didn't want to listen to myself play that music. I didn't think it was cool. So I was listening to my Biggie and my Run DMC records and all this Latin music and all these singer-songwriters like Nora Jones and Joni Mitchell and Paul Simon and stuff, and I just thought that music was so much cooler than Hot Cross Buns, you know? So I started learning that music.
Do you think it's interesting too that you're playing with the Roots, because the Roots are one of the bands and one of the more contemporary bands that, you know, before their time, obviously on Jimmy Fallon, they were a band that did hip hop on stage, live music. I mean, you went and saw the Roots, there was a full horn section, there was the full band, but they were one of the first hip hop groups that really embraced the idea of being live like that, not using samples or using beats. Talk about, you know, for you, as you started to mature and recognize that you were going to be a musician and a producer and a writer, how did you fit the trumpet in? How did you say, I'm going to use the trumpet in the beats that I'm putting together for the music that Save Money Crew or whoever is working on?
Well, the Roots, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The Roots were totally an amazing blueprint for us as kids these days to get our ideas together.
That was your band.
To know that it was cool, even, you know, to put all this live music and rap music together. But it's from both sides, like, so that all the rappers that think that stuff is lame think that it's cool. But then also so that all the people that think that rap music is lame think that's cool, like with all the instrumentation. Because I think a lot of musicians, when they get really tied into like the technique and then getting really good at playing jazz music and transcribing all these solos, and you can get kind of caught up in the sport of jazz, you know? And I always looked to bands like The Roots or other bands like SF Jazz Collective that incorporate this music that I actually like listening to with real instrumentation. And I look at all my friends that are around me that are at, you know, the library doing poetry or spinning verses, and I think to myself, well, that's cool, and that's like something I do the other side,
right?
And then they do that part, and hey, that's cool.
Well, there's something great about, I mean, obviously the collaboration. I want to talk to you about that. Maybe we'll do that coming up after the news. But I mean, there really is a movement here in Chicago with a lot of kids around your age, 23 years old, where you're finding sort of the poets of that generation and the musicians of that generation, the producers of that generation. You guys have found this way to create almost a sound that is uniquely Chicago. Talk about the concept behind, you know, like you said, you're a musician, you were a trumpet player, you weren't on the poetry side. How did you find that side?
Poetry, I mean, that's so lame. Poetry found me. I think I fell into poetry just out of a love of music and the way words can be used musically and used not just in rhythm, but more so just in a creative and clever way, you know? I feel like a lot of the music, you know, you try and make something cool or like clever that you like, but it also has to be likable. So listening to all these poems, it's a really interesting, you know, comparison, because a lot of the amazing poets have the simplest lines, or a lot of the most amazing songs that you love have, you know, three stems or four, you know, four things happening. And I also think that just being young in Chicago and meeting people in different areas and taking the train everywhere and going to school in a different neighborhood than I lived in and traveling so far every day, it just led us to collaborate with people. We just ended up in similar places.
Right.
Chance and I just ended up at Harold Washington, you know, at a poetry open mic, you know. Fatima and I ended up randomly at a Louder Than a Bomb session together.
Doing the poetry stuff, I mean, at what point are you like, you know, I'm a musician, I've got all this background, why don't we work together? I mean, it starts with poetry, right? It starts with just getting, you know, being in the same bill or being in the same room. Mm-hmm. But when do you take that from sort of knowing each other to, okay, you know what, I want to show you some tracks, you know?
Yeah. I think that's just a personal relationship part of music, you know? People call it like marketability, but really the key is just being a really good person. That's like all you have to do is just be really, really nice and be on time and be
two things,
and be right. Clean and be respectful, you know, and be able to adapt to any situation, whether we're recording in, you know, somebody's closet or we're recording at this crazy huge studio somewhere in LA, like being able to be a to adapt to any situation and able to work with anybody is just to be, it's just being a good person. It's just being nice and being somebody that you want around, you know?
Donnie Trumpet's in studio with us. Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment are co-headlining with The Roots at the Taste of Chicago on Wednesday night. Huge show. Obviously, the man behind Surf, and also was just on Chance the Rapper's latest record, Coloring Book. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table with Donnie Trumpet. Stay with us. Please don't go. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Little Donnie Trumpet in a Social Experiment. Track off of Surf. Donnie Trumpet's in studio with me. They're playing at Taste of Chicago with The Roots on Wednesday. And, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about Surf, which, you know, that was one of the tracks from Surf. But it really was last year, last summer, it was the album that a lot of my friends, and I know that a lot of people in Chicago were listening to, because it was something new. It was something that it was a long-awaited sort of Chance the Rapper's next project, even though it wasn't his record. Talk about putting that together, because there's a ton of press, and everyone, there was a lot of anticipation for putting that together. But you guys, as a Social Experiment, you really stuck to your guns. You worked it together. I mean, there's really something great about the story of putting together this record.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it came together really organically. You know, I went on the first Social Experiment tour with Chance and Peter and Nate probably close to a year before that album came out, before Surf came out, maybe a little bit more that tour happened. But that's when I met Nate and started making music together with Peter. And when I went back to Chicago after the tour, Peter and I decided to continue making music. And so we started making music in his basement.
So you guys, essentially, just to give everyone the speed, you're the backup band of Chance and the tour he was on, the acid rap kind of the big tour.
Yeah, that was called the Social Experiment.
The Social Experiment tour. And so you guys were like the backup band, but you continued on.
Yeah, so it was kind of like our entrance as a band, or even as a group together. And so we started making music together, and then Peter and I continued in Chicago for a while. And we started making a couple songs that we felt we were going to make part of a bigger project. And the first project was going to be called Surf. And then there was going to be another one that was like, you know, Shore or like Wave or, you know, whatever,
sure.
Whatever it was, the next one was going to be another water associated thing. And really it just kept growing and growing. We just kept making more and more music. I think probably one or maybe none of those songs are actually made it to Surf that we started making in his basement. At the time I was kind of at a crossroads. I had just come off the Frank Ocean tour and then immediately into Chance's tour, and I was kind of figuring out like where I was going to live and how I was going to do for myself,
right? And who you're going to be as an
artist,
right?
So I was torn between getting a spot in Chicago and getting a place in LA, and I decided to go to LA. So Surf was also kind of my feeling about this wavy, like beach inspired music, but really Chicago grown and Chicago sounding and Chicago feeling, and trying to like put those two together and wrap my mind around not living in the city I grew up in.
You're in a great position when you're starting with Surf, because yes, you can work on the stuff and work on the tracks and work on the music and work with Chance, but because of the success of the tour and because they're highly anticipated, you can attract artists to be a part of it. I mean, it's well known you're independent.
Yeah.
You don't have a Sony Music that's like, feature this guy, feature this guy, feature this guy. How do you attract a Big Sean and a Busta Rhymes and people like that who are major label rappers and MCs? That how do they get involved in a project with you and Nate and Chance in an Airbnb in LA?
Yeah, I mean, we've really been blessed with how many people appreciate and love our music and want to be a part of our whole movement, you know? I mean, and a lot of people are looking for a chance to rap a verse, and then he'll be like, well, actually, I got this whole band full of producers that can make this whole section, and maybe they'll make just the section under my verse, or maybe we'll make a whole song together. So some of the stuff came about really organically, just they happen to be in the same studio or happen to want to make songs together already. But really the bulk of it, the core of it, was me bringing these ideas to the band and having everybody flesh them out, and then feeling like, okay, well, whose voice really belongs on this song? And and truly just shooting for the stars. I mean, just like totally ridiculous, ridiculous assumptions.
Right.
Just being as insane as possible. Right. Like, oh my God, you know, Wyclef.
Right.
No way. But Wyclef would be incredible. And then we made Arthur. Or oh my God, Busta Rhymes. No way. No way. No way we're going to get a Busta Rhymes verse.
Someone friend him on
and
Facebook.
And then Uncle
right?
Bust comes through, you know. It was amazing.
That's got to be something. I mean, because at this point, I mean, this, wait, 21 years old?
23. Just turned 23.
You're 23 now.
23 now.
But when you were doing Surf, I mean, it's year and a half ago or so. I mean, you're 21 years old going, Busta Rhymes would be great.
Yeah.
And he's answering. Yeah, and he's saying he wants to be a part of it.
It's all about the idea. And as soon as you put that stuff in the air, you know somebody that knows somebody that can get that done, you know? I still have ideas that seem ridiculous and seem like they may never happen, but I want them to happen, and I'm going to keep trying until they happen. And if they don't, then they don't, you know? But at least we're trying. At least I want Randy Newman on a song, you know? Then at least I want that.
How much of this, you know, this idea, and when I hear this hustle, this pie in the sky, I want to go for it. There's something Chicago about it. There's aesthetic to it. There's always, with artists here, they're always hustling up, as I think. You know, how much of Chicago plays into that aesthetic?
It's all Chicago. That whole feeling is instilled in everyone that grows up in Chicago, that goes to CPS, that takes the train to home and school. You know, that walks past dangerous parks and police, and, you know, that experiences real Chicago things. You know, I think because we're in the middle of the map, but also because we're just influenced by everything, that we want a little bit of something. We want a little bit of that super hot thing that Texas has, you know, that super hot thing that LA does, or that super hot thing that New York does. So,
and the best part is you go and you have the balls to go do it.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes, is just believing that you can do it and then doing it, you know? And we just grow up believing that. And, you know, I believe that I have to go to this jam session and listen to these incredible trumpet players and get my butt kicked and get up there and try. You know, I believe in that. I believe that I have to walk past the projects with my trumpet on my back and look like a total nerd. And I believe in that. I believe that those are what makes us who we are when we get into the quote-unquote real music industry. Because the thing is, the music industry isn't really in Chicago. There's no major labels or, like, huge publishing and licensing companies and stuff. All that stuff exists in L.A. and New York.
If you want to get it done,
If you want to get that done, you got to go and get it yourself. You have to go out there and play the shows. You have to be in your high school handing out tickets to people. You got to be pulling up to people's high schools all over the city, pulling up in a car, jamming your music, and selling them tickets directly to your show, like looking them in the eye and telling them, come to my show, you know?
Surf comes out. It hits, you know, like iTunes. It's just it's the same concept that you guys kind of, that Chance worked on Acid Rap. I mean, the same sort of mixtape phenomenon where it's not a major label release. It's just there. Are you surprised, shocked, amazed? What's the feeling at how successful this record has been? Like I mentioned, 10 million plus counting on the downloads. We have a bunch of people who are in the window here at Michigan Avenue. The kid's showing Surf on his phone to you while you're talking. As a kid from Rogers Park, what's the feel that comes from that?
It's incredible. We, like I said before, you know, we are truly blessed that people honor and respect and love our music, and even just lending an ear is so much of the battle. Like, the internet age has made that a little easier, has made that transition happen faster, but it's still people really listening. It's still really that kid walking down the street with Surf and his phone that made it quote unquote successful. I would like to offer into the conversation what is successful and what it means to have a quote-unquote successful album. Does it mean that the album won a Grammy? Does it mean that the album should be, you know, performed in on movies? And,
or is
and,
it money?
Or right? is it I mean, money yeah, that right, it made? Right. Or is it sales that it made? Because it's not anymore. It's not kids going to Best Buy and trying to buy, you know, the newest,
standing in
the
line,
newest
right.
Donnie Trumpet album. Right, that's right, not going right, to happen. Right. So it has to be much more organic. Has to be much faster. It has to be much more in front of your face. And then as far as the names go, you know, a big part of success nowadays, for especially in rap music, is the name, is the name drop, you know? And I wanted to really do away with that. I wanted to make all these songs with features. Clearly, these are features from rappers and from established right. singers. These are all features where they are featured people, but it's not going to say featured because that's not what the song is. The song isn't a Busta Rhymes song.
Right.
The song isn't an Erykah Badu song.
Right.
But it could be, but it's not.
It's a social experiment.
It's a social experiment.
The whole thing is a social experiment.
Exactly. So in not featuring all these people's names, I'm sure...
It is interesting. I mean,
I'm sure a lot of people didn't get that, you know, that these people were a part of the project because it doesn't just list
or,
them.
Yeah, exactly. Or the way that people will search, you know, saying looking for Big Sean. That track may not show up. But the idea of organically being able to see those MCs, those rappers as artists... And you're an artist, and you guys all work together collaboratively. It
right.
shows. That's what makes that music work. It's not the next hot track from
yeah,
Busta Rhymes.
The
you know?
Song is much more important right. to me than the name drop.
Let's take a quick break. Donnie Trumpet's in studio with me. Donnie Trumpet and Social Experiment are co-headlining Taste of Chicago on Wednesday night with The Roots.
Ooh.
We'll continue our conversation with Donnie Trumpet here on The Download. Stay with us.
Say in her voice, in her way, that she love me. With her eyes, with her smile, with her belt, with her hands, with her money. I am the thesis of her prayers. Her nieces and her nephews are just pieces of the layers. Only one she love as much as me is Jesus Christ and Taylor. I got a feature song singing for my grandma. You sing it too, but your grandma ain't my grandma.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, a little Sunday candy from Donnie Trumpet and his Social Experiment record, Surf. Includes Chance the Rapper. Donnie Trumpet in studio tonight. We're having a conversation about his career, his music. He's going to be with the Social Experiment, headlining at the Taste of Chicago with The Roots on Wednesday night. I mean, just there. I mean, one of the great things about this, just talking to you, is sort of, you know, getting your feel on all the amazing things that have happened to you as a 23-year-old kid in Chicago from Rogers Park. I mean, mm-hmm. it's amazing to think. One of the things that's just happened to you in the last 6 months has been you guys have even upped your game even more. You sat in and collaborated with Kanye West on Life of Pablo, one of the, I mean, unbelievable records that came out this year. Chance put out a coloring book, which you're all over the first track, which is mm-hmm. great. Talk about, I mean, how you guys, and you personally, I mean, you're finding yourself in some pretty interesting company in the last couple weeks.
Yes, I mean, definitely all those things. Super blessed to have worked on The Life of Pablo with the legendary Mr. West. Super humbled to even be in that room listening to those songs before they came out and just be around that energy. I mean, it's so obvious. It's so instant why he is who he is, why he is the genius he is, because he's in there making these beats and you just instantly like you feel like this is Kanye West. Like, what? You know, that's really him. That's the person that makes that sound. You know what I mean? Like,
What did you learn as a producer and a writer? What did you learn from hanging out with Kanye West and working in Life of Pablo?
Man, to just be really honest and listen. You know, listening has always been the most important part of my musical experience, whether it's in a jazz setting or playing behind Chance the Rapper or being a lead with, you know, other people. It's really just listening and how much that does for everyone around you, how much it makes everybody better, you know? So I think just being really honest about, you know, really specific things. You know, okay, this snare drum just doesn't sound good. Let's just take it out and we'll use a different one. Or this kick is too loud. Bring it down a little. Or really specific things, but just kind of really being firm about things and being honest with yourself and with everyone around you. And then it's kind of in the air already. So then it can change. But your first idea is your real idea, is your real strong-willed, firm plan.
For you, talk about, you know, how you've matured as a musician, because from even the early days you talked about, you know, playing with your dad to kids these days, to your solo stuff, to surf, to now being in the room and collaborating with Kanye West and Chance and all the other people that were on Chance's records. Crazy. Talk about how you've matured as an artist and what you've learned over this journey that makes your music even better today.
Well, I've kind of, over the course of the last couple of years, changed my role almost completely in the studio setting, where I do trumpet sessions sometimes, or I'll do like replacing other horn stems and like on, you know, on people's tracks, and I can do those trumpet session work things, but my passion now is more for producing and making songs, and so. For example, Music Is All We Got is
great
something
song.
That I produced. I played those keys and made the song originally with Nate Fox. And I think and the song Special from Coloring Book, I made that whole beat. That's all me. There's no horns in it, but that's something I produced and I feel really strong about and feel really good about. And I think that's more my role now, is being in those rooms and making chord changes or key parts and synth parts and drums and whatever the song really needs, you know, and trying to find a better place for my horns and use them more in the way that I think about producing music versus being the trumpet player on the song. You know, I never really wanted
to, or even the band leader on the stage, right?
Yeah, I never really focused on like trying to recreate Earth, Wind, and Fire horns or like Thriller horns, because I love that music and I listen to that music. I'm inspired by it, but ultimately I have to be me and I have to make my own sound and my own choices about my instrument. And sometimes I feel like the trumpet doesn't need to be on the song, but it's still my production. So a lot of people don't understand that completely, and that's okay. I don't want to make a big deal out about every single song, about every, you know, I don't want to let people know that every single stem is me or that somebody else. But I think it's more my role now as making music, as thinking about the song versus just the trumpet's place in it.
You guys have found a way to be so creative in that space. I mean, to think about not only what you did on Surf, but Coloring Book, and even with Kanye West. What the real sort of push out of, or the feel from those albums, those mixtapes, is creativity. It's not a you know, here's the beat, here's the four, here's, okay, now we're gonna have the song, the rapper's gonna come in here. There's something about the arrangements of it, the producing, everything about the songs seem to be moving in a new generation for hip hop music.
Yeah.
Do you guys do you go into a project where you're like, we have to do things differently than we did last time?
I always think that. I think that every time I produce something or make something, I want to do at least one thing that I've never done before on the song. So whether that's a super high-pitched solo sometimes, or if it's way less or way more, whatever the situation calls for. But I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought looking at all these beautiful people.
There's too many
Chicago,
people outside.
You're so beautiful. It's like insane. I just keep looking at
all
these
right.
buildings.
Let's we'll wrap. I keep bringing it back because I think it's really important. But you know, the Save Money Crew, Social Experiment, Chance, everyone in between here that have been on the show or have produced in this town are from Chicago. And you guys are from, I mean, you mentioned a little bit about being part of the Chicago public school system and having to, you know, take train lines to school. But there's something about this generation. You guys are all around the same age and you all kind of came up with the same school system. Talk about what that means to you, that even at this age, when you're collaborating in the same room with Kanye West, that you all have that. You all have this moment where you are Chicago product.
It's really humbling. You know, it's humbling to feel like people are listening to your music, because ultimately as a creative person, as a music maker, that's all you ever want. That's all I ever wanted out of any of this, is for people to listen to my music and appreciate it, even if it's really, really weird. And there's no vocals sometimes, and it's still called pop music, and there's no features, and, you know, like, all those things, they're just, like, so distracting now. It's so, like, lights in your face, you know? So I really wanted to just bring it back to the song, and all these people around us feel similarly, you know? They all appreciate the song more than their ego, you know? And it didn't always happen, you know? I think it took kids these days to get me to that place where I was like, I don't always have to play the trumpet. That's not my role. I don't always have to fill that space that I feel like I'm assigned or something. It's about the product. It's about what happens in the end, you know? So I think letting go of ego... And this generation really experienced something way different than the generation before us that we hear all the time from our quote unquote big homies. Just that Chicago is like the city of haters or something, you know. I've never experienced that type of hate in Chicago, you know, like the type of like, oh no, that's not cool, you know. Like, people seem to be in a different place spiritually and creatively and artistically, where it just makes kind of this weirder, like, jazz music cool, you know? Like, Terrace Martin was talking to me on the phone about how he used to hide his saxophone in sessions where he was producing, you know, because it just wasn't the thing, you know? And now it's like people are really appreciating that style. So it's coming full circle. It always does.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you that, will we see a project like Surf again? Will the Social Experiment come together as a band, the five of you, to be able to produce like you did with Surf again?
Definitely. We have projects currently amongst ourselves. We have many different offspring, and we also have projects with other people, and those are super exciting too. Lots of music on the way, lots of secret music on the way, so very aware of your surroundings musically.
Well, Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment will be at the Taste of Chicago. They're co-headlining with The Roots on Wednesday night. Obviously, Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment produced Surf, the record Surf. Did a lot of work with Life of Pablo and The Coloring Book, and we're destined to see Donnie and Social Experiment on stage at the Grammys, because this is the year that now that they've made that, they've opened that up, we're going to be able to see the Social Experiment in front of the big lights at the Grammys. Donnie, thanks so much for coming in, and thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Peace. Love you, Chicago.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. I'm telling you, man, we're going to see Donnie Trumpet and Social Experiment on stage at the Grammys coming up here in February.
What a great young man.
And they would, yeah, exactly. And they would be stupid not to do that. Yeah. There was a big, you saw the big change that they're going to let streaming albums be in the Grammys this year. They didn't do that. Yeah. So Surf didn't get a chance to get a Grammy nom because they didn't, you know, make the grade in that regard. So now that's changed. So I think that you'll see both Coloring Book and Life of Pablo and performances by those artists at the Grammys. At least I hope so. Anyway, coming up, we're going to talk with Al Jeanne and also Stacey Majera here. She's the Barrington gymnast who now works for Cirque du Soleil. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me now, our resident philosopher, Al Jeanne. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. And he's our resident philosopher. Good to see you, professor.
Always good to be here.
Now, instead of today doing a lesson or trying to give you a moral, let's talk about reading.
Yeah.
Reading's important to you.
Reading's really important to me. And when my students say, how do you know that? And they think, you know, I mentioned something about the Civil War, and they assume that I was serving in the Civil War. I mentioned something. And I said, no, I read a book. You know, these little square things, it's not a screen. It doesn't go on, et cetera, et cetera. I read a book. And, you know, and I think that I need to read, not simply in my discipline. I never read in my own discipline on vacation or in summer. I think we need to read for diversion. I think novels are this wonderful gift we have. And light history, I mean by light history, I don't mean reading, you know, the Constitution of the United States and why all those legalities are
right,
there.
Right.
But, you know, Doris Kearns Goodman and her wonderful book on Lincoln or something like that. So every summer I try to offer them at the university a reading list.
I always think of reading as a thing to do when it's cold out, when you're inside. But because I know you do this all the time, like the summer reading at the beach, reading at leisure is so much more important.
I think there's something absolutely exquisite about And this last weekend, for example, sitting in the backyard under a tree when it's perfect weather and the bugs aren't out yet, and reading a book for 6 hours.
Yeah, right.
The most, the greatest
bugs
indulgence.
Are out, but that's okay. You know,
right, not with your 10-year-old, to be assured. But the reality is, I think reading takes us out of ourselves. I think reading is a time to get away from ourselves. And just like vacations, we learn something about ourselves in the lives and the experiences of others.
All right. Well, one thing I love about summer reading lists is it really is gives us a chance to try some new stuff out, stuff that we may not have thought about before. So, Professor, what are you reading this summer?
Well, I'll give you a couple of novels. And my favorite book this last year, we're talking about a book by Jill Alexander Eastman, Hausfrau. Mm-hmm. And it's the opening line of the book reads, Anne was a good wife, comma, mostly. And mostly meant that she was not, when she was not having an affair with a fellow German student or her husband's best friend or a stranger she just happened to meet in the park.
Sure.
But outside of that, she was just great.
Yeah. Mostly, yeah.
But this is not a story of infidelity or sex or even marriage per se. It's a story about alienation, about being alone, about being lonely, about being uncomfortable in one's own skin, about being disenfranchised in another language. You know, I think about that. Our fear of traveling is always, can I speak that? About always never feeling good about oneself. In fact, in some sense, this book is really about exactly what Virginia Woolf meant, her statement about Oakland. You know, there's no there there. There was nothing in her life she loved. She didn't want to be married. She didn't want to fall in love. She didn't want to have children. She didn't even want to have affairs.
She didn't even know what she wanted.
She didn't even know what she wanted. Hmm. And reading about that, I think, helps us all.
Okay, so that's a good one. What else you got?
Well, Elizabeth Strout has been on a roll for a while. She's the author of Olive Kittredge, which you saw both on HBO and a book. And my name is Lucy Barton. And this is a wonderful story about a woman. And the theory of the story is we only have one story in our lives. And we play out that story in different versions, in different ways in our lives. This woman is now in her mid-30s. She's suddenly ill. She's alienated from her husband. She's alienated from her daughter. And they can't quite diagnose her illness, except she has absolute lassitude and been in the hospital for weeks. And suddenly her mother shows up, the mother she ran away from, the mother who never gave her attention, the mother she hated and the mother who hated her. And she sat at the end of her bed for 5 days and never said much. And that's how they spent their time together. And it reminded her of the pain then and the pain now and how much pain we have in our lives. And if we don't do something about that, we're caught in the pain. Less depressing than you think.
Yeah, I was going to say, you ain't got
a
golf book that we can go with? I don't know why we get so depressing on the summer reading list.
I'll give you a golf book. Not a golf book, but how about Just Ward's Jack Gantz? Now, Scott Simon says this is his favorite Chicago political book. It's set in Chicago in the late 1950s, and it's a story about politics and political characters and how politics is so important. And about politicians who are concerned and politicians who aren't concerned about, you know, the public good. And it's really about power, payola, payback, position in place. And the guy is trying to do the right thing, wants to be a public servant, but realizes there's no way to be a public servant in Chicago unless you know the right people at the right time in the right place. Having the
right dinners and
the right payoffs. It's a wonderful slice of politics. It's a wonderful slice into the underbelly.
I love those books.
Yeah.
I love
they're great.
Yeah,
totally lost in that kind of stuff.
If you got a couple more, why don't you throw them to us?
All right. I'll give you something in your background.
A lot of pictures.
Okay. Listen, I've just gotten into graphic novels.
Oh, right.
I think they're wonderful. Some of them are absolutely fabulous. We should talk about that sometime.
I'll only read a book if in the middle of it it's got picture, like the middle section, it's got a little bit of pictures, and that just takes up some time. I feel like it's a triumph to get to that part. If I get to that part, I'm like, reading.
Here's the point. With all our wonderful communications, everybody's got this little machine in front of them, right?
The
computer to the world. We don't do long reading anymore. Novels may be the dying art form. I always thought the short story would take over. It hasn't quite yet, but I always thought the short story, that's all we have time for, is, you know, 6,000 words. And I think novels are going to be a dying art form because people don't spend that kind of time reading.
I have to
anymore.
Say, you know, I'm guilty of that. The show, the download here, has forced me back into reading because we have guests on, we have authors, and I read the books. And you know, I'm glad that I have a job that forces me to read, but otherwise I don't think I would do it.
And when we read all day long, there's really a problem. How do you go home and do that? Let me offer something different, okay, something in your field. Kilohertz Nesterov, what a strange name, is a South African. The comedians, and it's this history of comedy. You know, it's from the vaudeville to the Borscht Belt in New York to Chicago nightclubs to the Vegas Strip to the golden days of TV. He lists and enumerates every player in the field of what they did, from Milton Berle, Uncle Milton. I remember watching Milton Berle on television and how important that was, and Jackie Gleason and the modern guys, so on and so forth. It's a wonderful history of the ins and outs of comedians and how comedy has affected our whole understanding of show business and the entertainment world, and how, when watching even TV now, all these guys on sitcoms, all these guys and gals on sitcoms, where are they from?
Yeah, right.
They're from some stage.
They're from some stage in New York or L.A.
And
Chicago.
Doing stand-up. Yeah. And it's a wonderful, wonderful book. Huge. Ironically, the book is not full of jokes. You would think that
those are the best
no
comedy
jokes.
Books. Those are the best comedy books. Yeah, you don't want jokes in your
comedy
books.
And he doesn't at all deal with Mark Twain's famous statement, "Humor is the only weapon we have against reality." Luckily, I'm writing a book exactly to that point.
There you go.
We'll fill that in later. But I think it's a wonderful, wonderful book.
All right, we got time for one more.
All right, I'm going to give you a really strange one. A book by Guy, G-U-Y, Sayer, The Forgotten Soldier. And, you know, we've written a lot of books about World War II right now because, you know, the passing of the Guard, and my father's generation is totally dying off, so on and so forth. And I've been rewatching the Band of Brothers. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. But it's all from our side, right? It's our soldiers' experience and what they did, so on and so forth. And this is a 17-year-old Alsatian man-child who was dragooned into the German army. Barely speaks German, you know, because he's Alsatian, and is not a Nazi, and is, you know, not ideologue at all. And he thinks it's a great romantic thing. He's going to march off in this magnificent army. You know, this is the adventure of his life, and winds up surviving four years of combat from Russia all the way down into Poland, to the end. And in the end, they were just trying to survive. They were not fighting for mother or country or anything else. They just wanted to survive. And we've talked about boy soldiers in Africa. This is the boy soldiers of Europe. Mm. And so to read this from another point of view, it was really fascinating. I've read this twice. It's a huge book, but it's a book you get lost in. You think this has got to be fiction. It isn't fiction. It's really fact.
I had a neighbor when I lived in Lincoln Square, an old man who told us he fought in the war, but he was on the German side.
And he
was just a kid. He was a kid who just got drafted.
He
fought, and then he left. And now he was living in life. I was like, okay, are you using this grill? Can we use the grill? I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
The reality is, I think we look at my father's experience, and I realize how much my father was affected by that experience and how that changed him as a person. You know, he had three uniforms in his life. He went from CPA to the Cubs farm system in Iowa to the United States Army. And he never had his own adult suit until 1946. And how wars change. But you got to remember, that's both sides.
Yeah.
And not every soldier is an ideologue.
Every soldier is trying
to survive.
Well, this sounds like a great list. It's a summer reading list from Professor Al Genie, who's our resident philosopher. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. Professor, great to see you.
See you soon.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. Cubs might get lucky here. Cubs getting blown out in New York, which I have to say, it's kind of funny to think about because they don't get blown out at all.
It's too late, isn't it? Because isn't it an official game?
Is it?
4.5, and I think they're in the middle of the fifth. So,
you know, this is going to make everybody in Chicago angry at me. But I do have Jacob DeGrom on my fantasy baseball team. So I'm a little annoyed at the rain because he was about to get a quality start and win out of this one. Yeah. But now because it's the fifth inning, he ain't going to come back in there.
Well, I would be you could rest assured he's going to get a win, don't you think?
Yeah, he'll get a win.
10-1
but
right now.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, you know, the White Sox have been blown out a few times, and I would assume every team in Major League Baseball has been blown out a couple times this year. That's the way baseball works. The Cubs haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one game maybe early on, I believe, that maybe they got beat by Milwaukee or some one of those low-level teams. But this is very high, this highly unusual. Jason Hamill gives up 10 runs.
Yeah, that's
earned.
Crazy. They left him in, I think, let's see. I don't know if he gave up all 10. Did he give up all 10?
He did,
at least, yeah.
Yeah, 10,
he did.
Four
oh
innings, 10 earned runs. Nine hits, two walks.
Roger and I are sitting here going, why don't they pull him? Why don't they pull him? And the ball goes sailing out of the park again. Whoa, there it goes.
Pete, you're a huge Cubs fan. You're a diehard Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you worry about games like this or series like this, the hype, the idea that this is the first series since the NLCS?
Yes.
You worry as a Cubs fan that this is a team that somehow mentally has the Cubs number?
I'm not sure if mentally they have the Cubs number. I just think they just beat the Cubs. I mean, I think the Cubs are fine with the mental aspect of the game. I just think that they need to play better, and they haven't been doing that.
Well, I mean, maybe they're just running into some competition here because they have played. And, you know, again, I don't – to me as a baseball fan, and I've made no – I like the Cubs. I'm a Sox fan, but I like the Cubs. But they're also handicapped in the way that they've had some injuries. And they have Dexter Fowler is going to be in the – when it's NLCS time, Dexter Fowler will be in there. Jorge Soler will be in there. You won't be having Albert Almora Jr., you know,
well,
Whopper Jr., he won't be playing center field in the NLCS.
I think Jorge Soler is a guy that I wouldn't mind getting rid of if they can get some quality relief pitching. So he may not be there.
Yeah, you really think that the Cubs will start taking some of these young guns?
Yeah, they're not going to get rid of Kyle Schwarber or Javi Baez or any of these guys.
I saw that that's what the Yankees want, Schwarber.
Yeah, for one of their main guys or Chapman.
For an Andrew Miller.
Miller, yeah.
Which I would not do. Andrew Miller has been tremendous in New York, but didn't he have a stint in Boston? Was he in Boston? Before he was in New York, he was somewhere else, and he wasn't effective at all. So it's all about opportunities and placement, and I don't know. I mean, they know more about baseball than I do at the Theo Epstein level. But I don't know. I think Soler played really well in the playoffs last year. You know, he hasn't been that great of a regular season guy. He gets hurt a lot, but he was. There was a point there where no one was hitting, and Soler was walking every time or starting rallies. So I don't know. There's something about that kid that he might have the sort of fortitude for a playoff run.
I'm concerned as a Cub fan because I don't want them to get blown out. I just want them to be competitive, and it really that first game stung because they brought a 40-year-old reliever in who stunk up the joint. And they had a 3-0 lead to lose, and now today, obviously, they're getting killed. So that's a loss. I mean, I guess the good thing is 2 more games. You have Lester and Arrieta coming. They have to come out with a split on this.
They do?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's only June, yeah. Like John Lackey said, you know, big boy games happen in the playoffs or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, I think that this is a team that they're going to have to contend with. And I think...
Now, the big joke of it is that the New York Mets are not a shoo-in to even be there at the end. They're having a up-and-down year. They're in the same division as the Washington Nationals.
Yeah, who swept them.
Yeah, who are probably the team that are going to come out of that division. And then you have to hope for a wild card, and they're going to have to deal with the Dodgers, the Cardinals, the Pirates will probably rebound. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are in front of the Mets. I mean, the Mets, which is actually great for the Cubs, it might be one of those situations where I always – in the back of my head, and I know all Chicago sports fans feel the same way, would it have been a different outcome in the 85 season if the Miami Dolphins get to the Super Bowl? And I'm not saying it would have been a different outcome. I think the Bears still would have won it. But I don't think, you know, is it possible that the New York Mets may have the Cubs number, but we don't see the Mets? You know, that could be a good thing.
The thing that concerns me about the Cubs is that they haven't won a lot of close games this year. And in the playoffs, usually the games are close and low scoring.
Yeah.
And that's a concern. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure they'll probably still make the playoffs unless they have a total collapse.
Oof.
But, you know, the Mets are a strong team with really good starting pitching that the Cubs might have to face. You know, I mean, I'm concerned.
Really?
Yeah. I know they started off like, they're going to break all the records.
49 wins or something like that.
51.
Oh, they're 51 already?
Yeah. But still.
You're concerned.
Yeah, stupid Cub fan, always concerned. Dummy.
Oh, wow. Coming up here, Stacey Majera is going to join us. She is the Barrington gymnast. She won a couple of state titles in gymnastics for Barrington High School. She went on to UIC. She continued her work in gymnastics, did some conference stuff there for UIC, and then came out and was like, well, what am I going to do with this? You know, am I going to do Disney on Ice, but I'm not a skater? Is there Disney gymnastics? What do you do?
There should be.
What do you do? I'll ask her this. What do you do if you want to continue gymnastics after you're done with college? What are the options? She found the option, which I think is a great one, and I didn't even think about, is Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's not circus. That's if you've seen a Cirque du Soleil show, you know the level of athleticism, acrobatics. I mean, a gymnast fits in. There's so much going on, even, you know, up in the air that you don't even think about. So she was able to get on with Cirque du Soleil in San Diego, and she's currently doing Vegas shows, and now she's coming here with Cirque for a run in August.
You watch the Olympics, and, you know, these gymnasts are 12 years old, right, and they're like 42 pounds, and then they retire. I don't know.
The only good news I can think for the gymnasts, the gymnastics team at the U.S., is that the mosquitoes aren't interested in the 40-pounders, right? So no worry about the Zika virus there. They're going to be going for more like the weightlifter guys. You know, shot put guy. Maybe is rugby a thing?
Yeah,
is rugby,
juicy. Yeah.
The 12-year-olds, they're like, nah, yeah. Why am I going to mess with this? I'm not going to mess. No fat. There's no fat. We need fat in our diet. We're Brazilian mosquitoes. All right, so Stacey Majera is coming up here on the Downland, coming up at 10 o'clock. The frying pan. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, Cirque du Soleil is coming back to the United Center, not the parking lot, the actual United Center. The show is called Taruk, the first flight, and it's going to be at the United Center from August 3rd to August 7th. It's a prequel to James Cameron's Avatar, and it's much more of a story-driven Cirque show than some of the recent offerings we've seen here in town. And for the first time in a long while, this Cirque show has a Chicago connection. It features Stacey Majera, who's a Barrington native, who won 5 gymnastic titles. She went on to UIC on a scholarship where she continued her excellence. When done with college, she joined the cast of Cirque in San Diego. Then she moved on to Viva Elvis and Ka in Vegas, where she was acrobatic captain on Viva Elvis. Stacey Majera is in studio with me tonight on the Download. Wow, it's a pleasure to meet you. And you're like Illinois royalty.
It's good to be back in Chicago.
And when you walk through, are people high-fiving you for all the gymnastic titles you had at Barrington?
No.
All right, so let's talk about, you know, your time now. I mean, you're a gymnast, you're an acrobat with the show. Talk about how you got into that, because I think about gymnasts at the college level, and I always wonder, once they get past, you know, the amateur ranks, what's the next step?
Yeah, when I graduated college, I wasn't ready to be done with gymnastics, so I tried to figure out a way how I could keep doing it, and I auditioned for the show Cirque de la Mer. So that was my transition into circus arts, because they taught me how to do Chinese poles and flying trapeze into the water, and we did high dives and tumbling. So when I did that show, I learned more about the business and found out that you could be an acrobatic performer as a career. So
as a gymnast, what are the options when you're done with college, when you're done at UIC, if you wanted to continue in gymnastics, what are the options?
Well, usually people go into coaching. And really, most gymnasts retire after high school, so 17, 18 years old. So college is kind of the last run of your gymnastics career.
I've heard a lot, you know, I think of other shows that are similar. I've had some musician friends who've tried out for, like, Blue Man Group, where they came in and they're like, I guess I'll do this. And then they realized the rigors of the drumming that is needed for Blue Man Group is intense. Like, it's something much more than playing in a local band. For you as a gymnast, is that similar? Taking your skills to Cirque, I mean, was it a no-brainer, like an ease transition, or was it difficult to make the transition?
It was a super fun transition, because in gymnastics, you just have the 4 events, and you do those 4 events your whole life. And in Cirque du Soleil, there's so many different new apparatuses that you can learn and so many more possibilities to choose from. And from the performing standpoint to wearing different costumes and playing different characters, there's a lot that goes into it.
At the core base of a Cirque du Soleil show, and I've seen a couple, is it core based in gymnastics? I mean, is the same principles apply to what Cirque does and what, say, you were trained?
It does apply. People come from different backgrounds. A lot of people do come from gymnastics backgrounds, and some people come from circus backgrounds where their families were a circus family and they grew up traveling on a train. So it just depends on the person.
Well, I mean, what's the difference? I mean, if you're circus trained, what are they getting that you're not getting as a gymnast?
So they grew up learning how to juggle and do hand balancing and flying trapeze.
Not a lot of trapeze in the IHSA gymnast program.
Right.
What did you know about Cirque before you got into it, when you were in high school at Barrington or even at UIC? What did you know about Cirque du Soleil?
Well, in college, my college roommate had Cirque du Soleil posters in our room, and she had some Cirque du Soleil videos. So that was kind of my first introduction to Cirque du Soleil. And then when I graduated college and, you know, did Cirque de la Mer, I didn't really know how one would get into Cirque du Soleil. So when I was in Cirque de la Mer, I learned a lot more about the performing business, and I made an audition tape. So I just collected all the video I had of me doing gymnastics and, you know, anything, and I sent that tape to Cirque du Soleil.
Interesting. So the idea of, there's one part that's, you know, understanding acrobatics and gymnastics, but there's the other side that's turning that into performance.
Right. So when we're training for the show, we have hours of classes every day on character work, and they'll give us different scenarios, and we have to act it out with our bodies or with other people and learn how to work together to get a different feeling or story across.
Was that easy for you to pick up?
It was really difficult in the beginning and very abstract. So they would try to get you out of the box and say you have to act out the color yellow, for example, and just try to break down your barriers and get you loosened up and ready for anything.
Beyond just the idea of having to learn how to perform or perform the Cirque way, there's also the rigors of actually performing. I mean, watching the acrobatics that are in a Cirque show, I mean, it's mind-bending what you guys can do and what you do put on. Talk about what it takes to keep your body in shape and to be mentally and physically prepared to be able to do what you do on stage.
Well, each day is different, but we'll have a training for a specific act, which is a workout in itself, and, you know, the show is a workout in itself. And during the training, we'll train harder tricks and different combinations to always up the acrobatic level, and, you know, the show is always evolving. And then after those trainings, we'll do injury preventative exercises just to, you know, keep all the little muscles strong so you don't roll an ankle or anything. And then backstage, we'll have Pilates classes to keep our core strong. And then we have a rope backstage to do different body weight strengthening exercises there.
How prevalent is injury when it comes to Cirque du Soleil? I mean, do the acrobats and the gymnasts that are involved in the show, are they prone to injuries, ankles, hamstrings, whatever it might be, because of the intensity of the show?
No, there haven't been too many injuries on our show, knock on wood. Everyone takes pretty good care of their bodies, and each person knows what they personally need to do to get ready for the show and keep their bodies warmed up.
That's where I'd be out, Pete. I'd be out just because I feel like I pulled a hamstring just walking in the Gay Pride Parade this week. So I'm not going to lie to you. We're talking with Stacey Majera. She is she's with the show, which is called Taruk, The First Flight. It's a new Cirque du Soleil show, which is coming to the United Center this summer, August 3rd through August 7th. Stacey, you grew up here in Barrington. Talk about what it's like to come home, especially, you know, having such a background in gymnastics, to come home as a member of Cirque du Soleil.
It's so exciting. I've never performed in Chicago. I've been performing in Las Vegas for the past 7 years. So, you know, my family's flown out there to come see me. But now that I'm here in Chicago, all of my family and all of my friends and old teammates and coaches can come see the show. So I'm super excited.
How does that make you feel to think about all of the time and energy and hours put into gymnastics, to winning these titles with the people that were alongside of you, the families, everything, and to come back and be, you know, at the United Center as part of one of the best shows that offers this kind of stuff?
I mean, it's a really good feeling. I remember seeing I think it was maybe the TJ Maxx tour, the gymnastic show that was there a couple years ago. And I mean, I was just in awe of those girls, and I can't believe that I'll be performing in the same arena as them.
Do you get any time to go to back to Barrington High School and be like, to get to do the pep assembly? I guess it's summertime, so you got to gather all the kids back in. That's a problem. We could bus them in. Maybe we could do something. But talk about what it means to have this profession, to be able to do something that you've been doing for so long in your life. I mean, to think about, is there another passion in your life that would replace gymnastics if this wasn't available to you anymore? Or was it always the plan to continue to be in this arena?
I've always loved gymnastics, and I've always loved performing, and it's really been a dream come true for me, and I really can't imagine doing anything else.
Talk about what it means to be an acrobatic captain. First of all, what is an acrobatic captain?
So you're in charge of what needs to be done at each training. So whether that means different people learning different tracks in the show so that we can cover each other if anything happened, or just rotate so you're not doing the same thing every night. And you'll do the lineups for the show each night and kind of switch the lineup around so each day the show will be different.
Performing for 7 years in Las Vegas, what has that been like to be part of a tremendous rich history of big-time shows in Las Vegas? I mean, people come to Las Vegas and they go see a Cirque show. What's that like to be a part of that?
I mean, it's such a great feeling, and again, it was a dream come true. I can't... It's hard to believe that that's what I was doing for the last 7 years. Every single day I kind of have to pinch myself and be like,
is it a weird life to live that way? To live in a way where you got a show every night and you live in Las Vegas and you work on the Las Vegas Strip?
I thought it was so much fun. You know, you're not living on the Strip. You live off the Strip, so you do have a very normal life, and there's a lot of fun things to do off of the Strip, hiking and camping and Lake Mead and go on boat trips. So it is a normal life outside of the Strip. And then you drive to the Strip and go to the casino and, you know, see all the tourists as you're walking to work. And that's always good people watching.
Well, Stacey Majera is back in town. The Barrington native is starring in the new Cirque du Soleil show here in Chicago called Taruk, The First Flight. It's going to be at the United Center from August 3rd to August 7th. Stacey, thanks for stopping by and talking about your career.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Guns N' Roses in our fair city tonight at Soldier Field. If we would have thought about it, I would have just killed off all the programming tonight, done 4 hours of callers, just suggesting what the running order should be. Like, what's the set list? It's a great game, right? What do you open with if you're Guns N' Roses? Pete, you're Guns N' Roses guy?
Yeah.
Would that be the song right there? That, like, it has to be something where the lights go down and they're like... And you know it's about to start. They probably every show now at the Soldier Field Arena starts with some sort of video.
Yeah.
You know, like, what would you do if you were Guns N' Roses and you were going to kick off the show tonight? What do you start with?
Something from Chinese Democracy.
this is from our latest. It's rap rock.
Maybe like Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, it's a pert, right? Digga, 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 digga. Because then you're like... All right, yeah, the place is going to go crazy, right? Mm-hmm.
You need something to kick the place in the pants.
I mean, is there any other choice?
I'm sure there is.
But I mean that I'm asking everybody out there 312-981-7200. What do you start with? Is there any other choice than Welcome to the Jungle? Digga 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 digga. I mean, maybe Sweet Child of Mine, right? Maybe Sweet Child of Mine. But that seems to be like, yeah, right? You start hearing that, and I was like, Everyone gets their jean jacket out with their... Yeah. They play this song at the beginning of Carrie Wood's check-ins on the Rokan show. It always pumps me up.
Ah.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Like, that's the song they use. But Welcome to the Jungle. It's Carrie Wood.
I've been following on social media, you know, the people that are there. And once again, as with Beyonce a few weeks ago, there's a lot of Facebook posts of the video screen.
Facebook Live of the nosebleeds video screen.
I did laugh, though. One of my friends, he just had a comment, was a lot of bandanas here. Which I can imagine.
My buddy Tommy had the greatest jean jacket of all time. It was a cut. He has cut. It's sleeveless. And on the back, it's the Appetite for Destruction, like embroidered. Like he's in the Boy Scouts.
Oh, yeah.
On the back, it says Guns N' Roses. And I saw one of those. I had a friend as well who like had a picture of something similar on Facebook tonight. So at least, if anything, the good news for Guns N' Roses coming to Chicago is that you get to move some, you get to jostle your closet. Right? That's always a good thing. It's always good. You never know what's living in there and things like that. And sometimes you're like, you're not able to, you know, touch your Guns N' Roses sleeveless jean jacket. So now you get it out, you shake it out a little bit, maybe you jostle your closet. That's worth $100.
Do you care about Guns N' Roses?
I was never a huge Guns N' Roses. I like Guns N' Roses, and I will say that I am a huge fan of November Rain. One of the best songs ever written.
Mm-hmm.
Three guitar solos on that thing. It's just, it's epic. So I like that. I like that kind of Guns N' Roses. Like, I really like when they were so bloated and so big that they started, like, their creative projects. Like, this is going to be the biggest song we've ever done. Like, I like that Guns N' Roses. There's something to it. And who doesn't like Appetite for Destruction?
Yeah.
But you know, I think when it was out, it was, and, you know, I guess I would have been in eighth grade, maybe seventh, eighth grade when it came out. And it was quickly co-opted. Guns N' Roses was quickly co-opted by the Burnouts.
Ah.
They were like, this is our music. You can't have it. Hmm. So I'm like, well, can I have Poison? And they're like, yeah, they dress up like girls on that. You can have that. I'm like, all right, great. So I got that. I didn't get the – I wasn't allowed at the Guns N' Roses stuff, so that was tough.
The thing about what I remember a lot about Guns N' Roses was a previous radio station I worked at. Anytime it rained in November, we played November Rain because it's like 9 minutes long too. So it's like a break.
Anytime, you go outside, like, take a break.
You wake up in the morning in November, it's raining. I'm like, oh, I know what's coming up.
Go get in line at Sbarro. You got 9 minutes. What do you do? Okay, so let's say you got nine songs. You got to play a tight nine for Guns N' Roses. What I do, if I follow the formula, I go Welcome to the Jungle to start, right? Then I go Mr. Brownstone. I rock that out. Go something a little bit more hardcore, right? Then I go, that's the part after the second song that you break and go, how's it going, Chicago? Everyone goes crazy, goes, yeah. And then maybe there's like a set change. Axl Rose gets an acoustic guitar and they're like, wow. And you go into Don't You Cry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love you, baby. Don't you cry. Yeah, yeah. And then they do that, and they're like, oh. And then they're like, are you ready to rock? And they're like, then you do You Could Be Mine by from Terminator 2. You guys remember Terminator 2?
That is a good list.
Yeah, and then the fifth song, they go, hey, this is a new one we're working on. You know what we need? We need democracy. And where do we need it? China. Chinese democracy.
That beer run.
Yeah, and then they go, here's a new one we've been working on together. And you're like, okay, let's all go to the bathroom. Then you come back and you're like at the summit push. Then you got to start. Then I think what happens is you go, that's where I think you do a set change again, and you do November Rain. Probably November Rain. Maybe Patience. But I think Patience is a second encore.
Yeah, I was going to say first, second encore,
right?
Yeah.
It's tailor-made for they come walking back out on stage and like, get back!
Yeah.
And, but still dark on the stage. You know, just lit up on Axl Rose.
Yeah.
Know,
like, oh, yeah.
He's got his acoustic, he's up on the stool.
He may be in the middle, you know, how sometimes they'll have a stage in the middle, they'll propel the stage out a little bit.
Tells the story. I remember being in Chicago. Good to see everybody. Rosemont Horizon, 1987. And he tunes a little bit, and they're like, what's he going to play? And then he starts, ding, ding, ding. He starts playing that song. Yeah, Patience. Then he plays like a 35-minute version of Patience, and it brings the house down. Or it ends the show. Yeah. Maybe that's where he starts. Maybe does a cappella whistling. Right? He just goes, hey, Chicago. Oh, that's so good. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I totally forgot about the best one. And if I were them, I would get done with this song. I would do November Rain somewhere in there. You might have to do that in this. They may have to take like a 15-minute intermission to set up the strings. Right? But the one that they have to end with, right? I mean, there's no doubt when they're like, this is before the encore. This is the last song they play before they go to the encore, before the Patience encore. They go, all right, are we done, Chicago? Thank you so much for having me. Can you do me a favor? And it was like, yeah, take out your lighters. Put your lighters away. Okay. And then they go, all right, follow our lead.
Take me down to the take me through the fastest green and the girls all pretty. Oh, won't you please take me home? Yeah, take me down to the paradise city.
And the whole song, and then they go quiet so the whole place can sing it, and we can hear it from here. Oh, that'd be so good. So you don't need to see it. I just did it for you.
Yeah.
I just did it, yeah. Are you jealous?
Soldier Field, you know, like nothing appeals to me about Soldier Field, seeing them in Soldier Field.
You got my version of the Guns N' Roses show, and you didn't have to pay $11 for a plastic Bud Light.
You sure we don't owe anything for that? Roger wants to check.
He might. I think it all falls under ASCAP rules. Like I kept it under 30 seconds.
I know it's going to cost. It's just going to cost something. We know it.
There's going to be a lawyer, a Guns N' Roses lawyer on the line. Yeah, you can't clap your hands in a 4-beat. That's just not acceptable. You said the words November and rain in a certain. That's not.
Yeah. Couple $100.
What did I miss? But what did I miss? I mean, what songs are missed out of that? I mean, I that's all I got on. There's a texter says, you don't want to play Welcome to the Jungle or Paradise City too early, so they could open up with a song used from the Terminator 2 movie, right?
You could be mine.
You have to open up with something from Appetite.
Yeah.
I think Welcome to the Jungle, because you have so many good songs. You still have Mr. Brownstone. You still have Sweet Child of Mine. You still have Paradise City.
Oh, yeah, Sweet Child of Mine, too. Yeah, but I think Sweet Child of Mine is the first one on the encore. You got to have three songs on the encore and then finish with Patience. So I think it's Sweet Child of Mine. I think it's Live and Let Die, maybe. They did a cover of that, didn't they?
Yeah, seems
and
about
And they have
right.
to do that at the same time they do November Rain because of the strings, right? And then you wonder, are they using the Grant Park Orchestra? They bring their own strings. And if the strings have to have sleeveless jean jackets as well, right? And there's got to be a whole thing.
Absolutely.
And then there's got to be one cover song in there where they're like, hey, this is our favorite song. I can't believe David Bowie died this year. And they play Suffragette City or something.
Or Sweet Home Chicago or some stupid, you know.
We love being back in Chicago.
We love the blues.
Yeah, we love the blues. We're Guns N' Roses, man. We were inspired by the blues. Come on. Baby, don't you want to go? Don't you want to? I got to think of how would Axl Rose sing Sweet Home Chicago.
They also do a, did you mention Knocking on Heaven's Door?
Oh, no, my gosh. Yeah, you're right.
Knock, knock, knock. You know, I can picture him the swaying.
Louder. Then he said, like, I can't hear you. All right, so yeah, there we just gave you the Guns N' Roses the whole show, so you can thank us later. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Hey, good to be back, Justin. Thanks for having me.
We missed you last week, and it's great to have you back here. The listeners have been clamoring for another frying pan for a couple weeks now.
I bet they have.
And you said earlier today via text that you feel like you got a winner.
Well, again, I feel like I'm sitting on one of those ideas that is going to be pretty hard to poke a hole in, and you'll get what I mean by that in a bit.
Okay, well, there we go. 312-981-7200. You can do by phone and text to help us workshop Steve Gadlin's newest idea. Steve Gadlin, what's tonight's frying pan?
Okay, so here's the deal. You like going to birthday parties, right? Mm-hmm. We all do. And one of the really popular features at a good birthday party is something called a pinata. Are you familiar?
I am, of course.
yeah, you know, you it's a paper mache animal or character, and it's filled with candy, and kids blindfold themselves and then swat at it with sticks. Now, the pinata has a few built-in problems. That is, one, a lot of times it's difficult for kids to bust that thing open. You know, it's a game for children.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, the parent often has to step in and just rip that thing open with their hands. Two, the candy dispersal. By the time these kids crack a hole in it, the candy just sort of drips out and falls in one place, and you get a bunch of kids tripping all over each other and, you know, sustaining injury trying to get the goodies inside. So I give you that setup to introduce to you the pinata bomb. The pinata bomb is an explosive device that you put inside a pinata, and it activates after three whacks. So after the child hits the pinata three times, the explosive device will detonate and burst open the pinata. I mean, entirely. The entire pinata will burst open, and the candy will disperse in all directions very evenly. So it puts the fun back into the pinata by taking out some of the hard labor and by making it more of a fair and fun activity.
You know, I like this. I do like this. I've been involved in many birthday parties with pinatas that are difficult, or they half break, or when they do, you end up as the parent having to go in there and break it open. So the idea of evenly dispersing the candy with some excitement is good.
Yeah, and this pinata bomb is powerful. It will throw that candy about 100 yards in every direction.
Wow.
So it's quite a treat, and I tell you, kids love it. It brings a lot of excitement to the party, and the noise it makes when this thing goes off will bring kids from several neighborhoods over to help eat that candy.
Okay, well, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. What do we like? What do we don't like about pinata bomb? Steve Gadlin, our guest. Let's take a break. We'll get the calls lined up here. 312-981-7200. Do we like, do we not like, or do we have questions for Pinata Bomb? It's the frying pan. Stay with us. It's a frying pan here on the download on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me, Steve Gadlin. He is the local entrepreneur, innovator, inventor. He is the man who has come up with the newest idea, Pinata Bomb. This is I'll let you explain it, Steve. Pinata Bomb.
Yeah, so it's an explosive device that gets embedded into pinatas. So, it works kind of on a pressure-based system. So when it feels the pinata has been whacked three solid times, it will detonate, explode, if you will, and it will disperse the candy in a very even pattern about 100 yards in every direction.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. I want to get to the texts and the calls as well, but I'll start it off. 312-981-7200. Yeah. My first question, does it come in different colors?
No, it doesn't actually. It's just a single color. But we, you know, as an embedded device that the user doesn't actually ever see, we don't really think the color selection is.
Oh, so you put it in? Do you put it in existing pinatas? Is that the idea?
Yeah,
I see. Okay.
You can. This is an add-on for any pinata. You put in the candy, and then you put this thing in, kind of in the middle of the candy. You want to get it right there in the center so that when it goes off, it really blasts all of that candy 100 yards in every direction.
So essentially, you have a pinata that you pre-purchase that you get from the party store or wherever you're going to get a pinata, and then you insert this device that will help expand the candy.
Yeah, so business-wise, we are not going to manufacture pinatas. We see this as an add-on to an existing market, but it's our hope that down the line, you don't buy a pinata without also buying a pinata bomb. And that, probably a lot of pinata manufacturers will start to include this as an upsell, license our technology or purchase them directly.
That would be the hope, right? The hope would be to get into the market where you're actually part of the pinata making as opposed to, because the question I have manually, how do you get the pinata bomb inside the pinata?
Yeah, well, you just cram it in there the same way you do with the candy.
But it comes preloaded, doesn't it?
Well, it's pre, it's ready to go. It's live. Mm-hmm. But you need to, pinatas generally come without candy in them. If you're buying a real professional pinata, you need to buy the candy separate. So at the same time that you load it up with the candy, you want to load it up with the pinata bomb, which is basically the size of two M80s strapped together with a rubber band.
Okay.
And then, you know, you slide that right in the candy, so you don't lose a lot of potential candy volume there. You just, you know, it's pretty easy to get in there.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The texts are coming in pretty fast and furious, and they're all along the same line. 100 yards. That seems like a lot. That's a quite a distance, 847.
Well, you know, I might be mixing it up. 100 yards, 100 feet. I forget which one is a football field.
Well, I think it's 100 yards.
Okay, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, but that's a long way for candy to fly.
Well, you know what I think, too? If you picture a backyard where you're hanging a pinata bomb, you know, from a tree branch or something, that's it has the force to fly that far. But most of it is actually, you know, it will be stopped by fences and bushes.
All right, 630's got some questions here. They're pretty good. Okay,
yeah.
A few flaws that come to mind with the pinata bomb as it goes off.
Okay.
With only three whacks. I would say that an average children's party has about a dozen kids. Every kid's not going to have a chance to give it a whack at least once. And the other problem I see is that projecting candy, hard candy, enough to shoot 100 yards away, it sounds like it could be dangerous. And I'm getting that a lot with a lot of the texts here.
Well, here's the thing. I'd love to offer one that goes beyond three whacks here. Uh-huh. But one of the issues that we have is it's a pretty volatile material that we use to keep this stuff working, you know? So, you know, it's not the kind of thing you can tweak.
What do you mean?
When I mentioned it's similar to shape and size of maybe two M80s rubber banded together, it's not a coincidence. So it's a material that we can't really control the volatility of. Three whacks, it's going to go. You know, nothing we can do about that. You know, if you got 12 kids at the party, maybe you explain early on, maybe you play another game to decide which kids get to take a whack.
Like a competitive game, yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, once they hear that noise, no kid is going to regret that they didn't get a chance to get up there and swing the stick.
So
everybody's excited when they see that candy come shooting out. They're gonna go nuts for it. You know, same thing with normal pinatas. Once that candy falls, nobody remembers who got the swing and who didn't get the swing.
Well, I mean, I think I can understand. 312-981-7200. You mentioned, you know, obviously we're talking about there's some questions about the projectile. Candy, the 100 yards, 100 feet. We have landed on it being 100 yards. The other thing you just mentioned, which just grabbed a texter's attention, was the sound. What do you mean? Is it like an M80 in the sound that once the pinata bomb goes off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very loud. You know, it's think of something that has the power to blast that candy that far. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not springs we put in there. This is it's a noisy accessory for pinatas. But that's, you know, that's part of the excitement. You know, think of the exciting part of pinatas now. You've got the colors, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got the candy flying in different directions. And now you add to that sort of a heck of an explosion. And suddenly you've got a pretty neat, it's the party everyone's going to be talking about when they get back to school on Monday.
Yeah, well, it combines two loves, candy and fireworks, if you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, coming up on the 4th of July, it's an incredibly appropriate, you know, I don't think we'll get this thing out in time for this 4th, but maybe for next 4th. Hmm. And if not just birthday parties, maybe pinatas will become a thing that people traditionally purchase for the 4th of July because of the pinata bomb.
Okay, 815 brings up similar, I think there's a lot of math in here, so stand by. What kind of kids can't break open a pinata? Number one, have five kids have been to at least 50 birthday parties with pinatas. Yeah. Never had a problem with kids breaking it open. And this dude is selling explosives. Good luck selling explosives.
Yeah, well, you know, parents buy them. Okay, right. The kids just play with them, so I don't see an issue there. It's not like 8-year-olds are going to Party City making the order themselves. Hmm. And of course, this is a birthday party, which means there's adequate parent supervision. So, you know, we have that covered too. And as to what kind of kid can't break open a pinata, again, I don't know what sort of juiced up children this caller has got.
Maybe they're strong. Yeah.
I've been to many birthday parties, and the second that pinata comes out, all the parents start groaning because they know it's going to take 7, 8, 9 kids before they even just crack it open, or if the parent just has to intervene and rip it on the ground and start stomping on the head just so the kids can get their sweets.
Right. A lot of texts in here that are really surround the issue of safety. I'm getting a lot about safety, about the idea of this being exploded. One very, very particular question I think is very pertinent is, wouldn't the candy explode?
Well, the candy that's packed right up against it, yes, is going to either melt or be disintegrated in the explosion. Mm. But the candy on the outsides of the pinata will just be, you know, shot out like little candy bullets just flinging outside that pinata. So it's, you do sacrifice some candy, but I think the trade-off, oh boy, the trade-off, you know, it's you sacrifice a few pieces of candy for a pretty exciting thing. And if you want, pack it with cotton balls, you know, pack it with cotton balls and then put the candy around. But again, that's just extra volume, and we're talking candy that costs pennies for the bag, right? So I don't see that as an issue.
All right, 312-981-7200. I have to ask, a texter wants to know, 773, what's the cost of this product?
Yeah, so the pinata bomb is $250, which is comparable. I know that's there's a bit of sticker shock that comes along with that. But if you are in the market for pinata accessories, you will see that pricing is not really too far off. And how much does it cost to get a clown to come to a birthday party? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
a lot of money. So again, think of this as party entertainment. And again, it's pretty entertaining. That packs quite a punch.
Okay, the other part.
If you want to be the talk of the town, this is what you want at your party.
Yeah, it obviously is going to grab people's attention. The other thing that I'm hearing a lot is just more from our culture and where we're at right now. There's not a lot of wiggle room when it comes to explosive devices. We've seen terrible things done with explosive devices. A lot of people are saying, you know, they're using the T word. They're talking about, oh, what if the FBI is listening to this? They're just saying is this something that you can safeguard against being used just for pinatas, not for something else?
Yeah. The packaging is very clear. And I'll tell you, this is nothing that you can't buy. You drive to Indiana, right? Mm-hmm. You drive to Indiana at one of those little stores. You got the adult bookstore, and then you got the other place. And that's that place. So it's the same thing. This is nothing industrial, nothing that could do any sort of damage. And it's for kids, right? This is a kids thing. It's not it's not an explosive in the way you think of fireworks as being explosive.
Right.
This is safe for kids' parties, but it packs quite a punch, and it will shoot that candy right across the yard.
312 wants to know, do you offer reimbursement for damage done to said candy?
No, that's not part of the plan. You know, again, if people, there are instructions that come with it that show you how to pack it to minimize the candy that you sacrifice. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay, 312-981-7200. My guest tonight, of course, Steve Gadlin, the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He has a development deal with Mark Cuban before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban because he did win IWantToDrawACatForYou.com on Shark Tank. Before he brings new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to sort of workshop them with Download Nation. Tonight, the idea is the pinata bomb. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll take a break, and we'll get the update on tonight's news, and we'll come back, and we'll read some more texts and take your phone calls here on The Download. Stay with us, Steve, okay? It's The Frying Pan tonight. It's Friday night, 10 o'clock here on The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Steve Gadlin. He's the entrepreneur behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He went on Shark Tank. He won. He got a development deal with Mark Cuban. Now he brings new ideas, or before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them here to the Frying Pan Friday nights. Steve Gadlin, tonight's idea, the pinata bomb. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's an accessory that you embed inside your pinata along with the candy, so that after just a few taps, the pinata will explode and disperse the candy in a real even pattern, about 100 yards in every direction. So again, it sort of equalizes the pinata fun. You know, it used to be that candy would sort of drip out the bottom when a kid finally broke through, and the bigger kids would get all the candy. This really evenly distributes that candy throughout the yard so that everyone, no matter where they're standing, is sure to get their own stash.
Okay, we get a lot of questions. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text. 847 wants to know, what's the explosive material made of?
Well, that's a very good question, and unfortunately, that's a proprietary secret. That's nothing that we can step you through. But I'll tell you that it's two things. It's one, it's very explosive, and it's very safe.
Okay. Well, those two words don't usually go hand in hand, but okay, we'll take your word for it. 815 says Party City is going to have what, 25 to 40 of these on their store shelves? Never. And most pinatas run $20 to $40. You're nuts at $250. And well, the third question is, how do you stop teenagers from buying them?
Yeah, so, you know, we think teenagers don't really think pinatas are all that cool anymore. So we're not really worried about teenagers. And these aren't devices that can be used for anything but candy dispersal in a pinata. And we print that in real large letters on the package. So, you know, we're not worried about people misunderstanding or using these for a nefarious purpose. And three, you know, again, the pricing is more, it's not so much compared to the pinata. You compare it to the other entertainment, like a bouncy house rental or a clown or a balloon person. You know, it's entertainment for your party. And if you love your child, you spare no expense.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Are you going to need a FOID, a FOID card for this?
What's that mean?
That's the card that you need to essentially buy a gun.
No. This is, again, not a tool of violence, not a dangerous accessory.
Okay.
Something for pinatas only. So no. And yeah, you know, Party City can put a bunch of these on the shelves without any danger to the customers, so long as you put them behind a glass case and people aren't tapping on that glass constantly.
Well, that kind of is the same question that 815 has.
Right.
Will this be sold in other countries? If so, will this be safe to mail or place in my luggage?
No, you're not going to want to mail it. You're not going to want to put it in your luggage, again, just in case someone grabs the package and shakes it or when you throw your luggage through customs or through the baggage claim, you never know what they're doing to that stuff. So no, I would keep it out of those places.
Are you worried about lawsuits from flying candy and candy shrapnel?
No, I'm not so much. And again, because candy is not that, just imagine candy flying at you. It's one that's exciting. And kids will duck out of the way. Pinatas are generally about, 15 feet up in the air. So this stuff's going to have a nice arc. It's by the time it gets down to the level of a kid's face, it's lost a lot of velocity.
Oh, that's good to know. 773 says, will there be residue on the candy? If so, is it toxic if touched or eaten?
Well, we recommend this only with wrapped candy. So there may be residue on the wrapper, but that's only mildly toxic. We're talking stomach ache and maybe 2-3 weeks of loose stool. But there's no, I wouldn't, unless the kid's eating the wrapper, or if you're putting unwrapped circus peanuts in there, which we don't recommend at all. Those things, an unwrapped circus peanut, you won't even recognize it when it lands. It'll be mostly disintegrated anyway.
There you go. All right, let's go to the phones. Jeff, yay or nay on pinata bomb?
Hey, my question is, I mean, if this device can throw candy 100 yards, the velocity, the kid who's standing next to it with the stick is going to get blown up. It doesn't make any sense. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for that. That is echoes a lot of the same sentiments on the text. Steve?
Well, again, we recommend hanging the pinata from 15 to 25 feet above ground, so that when it is activated, I'd say the kid standing below it is actually the safest, because it's going to throw that candy in a scatter pattern. None of it's going to come straight down. So by the time it gets to the height of a child's face, our experiments show that most of it loses quite a bit of velocity.
Hmm. So 15 to 25 feet, how are the kids going to be able to hit the pinata?
Well, a long stick.
Do you sell the long stick? Maybe you could do a long stick comes with the pinata bomb.
We could. It's honestly something we just assume most people would have sitting around their homes.
Okay. 606 says, according to my calculations, it would take two sticks of dynamite to send candy that far in every direction.
Well, that's their words, not mine. I'll just say that. Mm. Yeah, I won't say much, but I'll say that was their language. That's not language that I ever used.
Okay. 312-981-7200. This is the time of the show where we read a little bit more of the pointed, colorful text.
Sure, okay.
Just to give you a little bit, you know, it's developing a thick skin for anyone who's in a position where, as an innovator or an entrepreneur, you got to be able to deal with some of the constructive criticism or just straight-up criticism that comes through.
If it's constructive.
Yeah. So we'll start. Let's start with the constructive stuff. 630 says, this guy is an absolute jerk.
Okay. Hmm. I don't know what that has to do with the product, so I'm not sure how constructive that is.
219 says, really, another crackhead idea from a crackhead ridiculous. Candy Stratton.
That's libel. That's libel. But, okay, go on. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going down here. Just exactly where are you getting explosives like this? ATF wants to know.
Well, I'll tell you, everything we're doing is in cooperation with all appropriate agencies. And I'll say this, we haven't begun testing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, is what I tell our investors.
Okay. Do you work for, this is 815, says, this guy sounds like he's in cahoots with the candy companies to increase candy sales, or he works for Trump. This is just a precursor to building a wall.
No, that's really, to go back to the first point, you know, no, I'm not in cahoots with the candy company at all. But what's great about our product and why I think we'll get a lot of support from candy companies is because it makes pinata so much more fun. So sure, candy sales will go up because more people will be using pinatas. Hmm. And that's just a gift we give to that industry.
815 says, please make this so I can buy one and sue you when it blinds a kid with flying candy, etc. Yes, please make one because I want to buy a new Corvette.
Well, now, it sounds like that person's interested in harming children. So if they carefully read the label on the bag, they won't be able to buy one.
Okay, well. You know how people do that, right? 219 says, why ridiculously expensive? How do you get back into your house each and every week, you goofy little man?
I don't know how to answer that question. I generally call in from my house if I'm not at the studio, and right now I'm dialing in from Ohio where I'm on vacation.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks for joining us. Yeah, 815 says, is this guy nuts?
I'm nuts for candy, and I'm nuts for fun at a party, that's for sure.
Okay. Keep going here. Hold on.
Yeah.
There are nuts. If a parent would buy this pinata, they're as nuts as he is. We did nuts already, right?
Well, again, I'll clarify. We're not actually selling the pinata or the candy. We are marketing an accessory that accompanies pinatas.
Oh, here's a good one. 630, Steve, why do you hate children? A banana peeler with sharp blades, chemical-filled ice cream, and now pinata bomb. Do you see the pattern?
I didn't until now. Gosh. You know, all of these devices are safe. They're safe, and they require parental supervision. So, you know, I have three children of my own. I love them very much. And don't worry, I love children, and I'd be happy to subject them to each of my products.
Okay. 708 says 12 kids go to the party, only 11 survive. Your idea is sadistic.
I think people are overestimating the force it takes to throw a little piece of candy 100 yards.
This dude is selling explosives. Good luck nowadays selling explosives for kids. Are you crazy?
You know, we're selling, we don't call it an explosive. We call it a candy propellant. And it is not, it's not for kids. It's for parents and other party planners.
Okay. Is there Jason or Justin, Jason, Steve, love the festive product. I want to know, is it Bluetooth compatible?
Yes. So it is Bluetooth compatible. We haven't yet discovered a use for it, but we have started to test its Bluetooth connection, and it's very strong.
Okay. 708 says, oh, goody, candy shrapnel. Not good, bad, very bad.
Well, they're sending a mixed message, so we're going to count that as a yay and a nay.
Right, right. Is this the same guy who did the scratch and sniff tattoo? And 100-yard candy would put an eye out. Go home.
So it wasn't a scratch and sniff tattoo. It was a tattoo that played an audio sample when you pressed it.
Oh, right. And I love that one. That was good. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one. The tattoo.
Yeah, the tattoo. 773 says, get this guy off the air before he gives Donald Trump ideas.
People love to associate me with that guy. And I tell you, he's probably my least favorite politician. Right. So I don't understand the association.
773 says, Justin, I can't believe you risk your career for this idiot.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't see that happening either.
It is Friday night at 10 o'clock. It is. It's like, yeah. I'm risking a lot here. I have one last one I want to do. Sue from Glenview, she's always great. She's 847. Mm-hmm. She said, oh, God, help me. I love it. That was it. Great. So she's usually pretty snarky, but she came through tonight with she loves the idea. Yeah.
That's good. Well, I hope she invites me to the first party.
There you go. All right. I'm looking for one more that's really good. And here it is. 708 says, I would rather hire you as a clown for $250.
Well,
pay for the pinata
possible.
Bond. So there you go. Yeah. You might actually get some money out of this in the first place. All right.
Yeah, that's great. I'll get my costume ironed.
All right, so good stuff. I think it's a resounding no.
Yeah. Again, I think this is born of people misunderstanding the nature of the product and being a little too scared about personal injury.
Man.
In my day, you let kids run around on the street and scrape their knee, and you didn't. You could ride a bike and a skateboard without a helmet. But these days, people love to coddle children, so I can understand how this would put a few people off.
Well, I love. There's some really good stuff here. That right at the end here. I'm going to read it here real quick. I want to draw my foot in your butt. Enough already,
stupid,
goofy man.
Okay, interesting.
That's good. 708 says 11 can't get here fast enough. And then 606 with the winner tonight that says, who would go to Ohio for vacation? Loser.
Okay, interesting.
Man.
Well, you mean home of the NBA championship Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yes,
who would? Now, let me tell you something. What really excites me is that no one asked about potential hearing loss, and that's actually the one thing that we are afraid of. We're not afraid of injury, but we do imagine two or three kids having a ringing that lasts maybe 6 or 7 weeks post-party. But
and you didn't even get to that part.
No one called me out on that. So
no one called you out. Well, at least you know what? Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. A successful pitch, a terrible product. How about that? I think you did a pretty good job. I truly do believe there needs to be some engineering done to make the pinata better. This looks to not be it. But Steve, great. Have a great 4th of July holiday, and we will get back at it again here on the frying pan. Stay, buddy.
Take care.
You guys remember the song Patience? That's happening right about now at Soldier Field, Guns N' Roses. We wrap up the download tonight. Rachel Woodall and Mark Carmen are in for Patty Vasquez at 11 o'clock. This is exciting.
How about that?
That's great.
Yeah.
Good for Rachel. I can't wait to listen. It's going to be great.
Wonder what they're going to talk about.
Longtime producer here. She's going to be filling in with Carm. That'll be fun. Patty had a crazy week down in Springfield, all over the place. Good for her. Next week on the download, a big week for us. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of great guests. We're not going to be here on the 4th of July. We will be watching the fireworks on Channel 9, as you saw here. On the big table on Tuesday, we'll be back on Tuesday. Bill Kim,
yeah.
Chef and restaurateur, does Urban Belly, Belly Q. Grew up until the age of 7 in Seoul, came here. Talked to him about his life in food, in Korean food.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. Also, Dave Perner from Soul Asylum.
Yeah.
How about that? Runaway train. Talk with Dave Perner on the show. Martin Starr from Silicon Valley and Freaks and Geeks. One of my favorite actors. Yours too at home. And I know mm-hmm. this. Martin Starr is going to join us and talk about. He just got cast in the new Spider-Man, the Marvel Spider-Man.
Wow.
Homecoming.
How about that?
He's not Spider-Man.
No.
He's going to be Spider-Man's geeky deadpan friend. What do you want me to do about it? Also, Lydia Lovelace.
Oh yeah!
She's doing the Square Roots Festival,
mm-hmm.
and Greg Hall from Goose Island. So there's a lot of great people that are going to be coming through next week.
Stacked.
I know. I feel like July. We're really excited. Pete and I are very excited because we're getting a lot of great confirmations, going after a lot of great guests in July to be a part of mm-hmm. this show. The download. I'm excited about it.
Of course.
You know it's going to be good.
Summer, doing it up.
Today was a great day in that regard. When Donnie Trumpet was on in the 8 o'clock hour,
mm-hmm.
there were a million people out here.
Yeah.
I mean, they were triple deep in the windows trying to get a look. And while he was on, I don't know if you noticed this, I think I mentioned it in the interview, they were holding up on their phone his stuff, like from Surf.
Yeah.
Like there were fans, like, take a look at that, while he's doing a live interview.
And we've had a lot of famous people rolling through here. And, yeah, I can't think of too many other people that we've had where there's been that many people.
It was pretty amazing. And it was kids, too, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
There was a lot of kids walking up Michigan Avenue who recognized him right away.
Yep.
Where I don't think that the people who were going to restaurants, staying in the hotels would know who he was. But I think we on the download, we should be the ones. We should be the ones that get behind Chance the Rapper, Donnie Trumpet, and Social Experiment playing at the Grammys. I think they shouldn't just be nominated, but they should be playing at the Grammys. Because this year is the first year that the Grammy Awards have actually opened up streaming-only albums and mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be you had to press a CD for it to actually be counted in the music world, and it's changed over time. People are just going, like, all of Chance the Rapper stuff, he just goes straight to iTunes, or he goes straight to his own site, or
mm-hmm.
he just releases stuff without any sort of major label record contract. And so that was always disqualified. And so now Chance is because that was opened up, Chance's record Coloring Book,
mm-hmm.
Kanye West's Life of Pablo, those are two albums that will be considered for Grammys. And I know that Chance the Rapper will be up for one, so they should be, just to honor the fact that they open it up, they should have Chance and the Social Experiment be at the Grammys. Do Sunday Candy.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Right?
Well, I don't know if that's probably not...
It's last year.
Yeah, that's not eligible. But, Coloring Book, Saba,
right.
Blessings or whatever would be a...
Yep.
Yeah,
Angels.
Angels, yeah.
I got my city doing front flips.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't that be great?
That would be good.
This is our...
So, yes.
The next winner is from a SoundCloud page.
I did like Steely Dan saying, and the winner for the record of the year is...
Hey, we're Steely Dan, and we won a ton of records here at the Grammys. And the winner is from SoundCloud.
What?
The SoundClouds. That'd be good. All right, so big week coming up next week. Rachel and Carm are up next here on The Download. That's going to do it for The Download tonight. Rachel Woodall and Mark Carmen in for Patty Vasquez tonight. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good evening, Justin.
So is this just going to be all basketball, free agency all night?
We're talking sports all night. It's Rachel's forte.
All hoops. I am so excited to talk about hoops, goals, balls, bats, everything.
All of it.
Yeah.
Rachel, that's what you talk about on the podcast Artistic License, right?
It's exclusively sports.
It's exclusive, right.
Yes.
Well, you've actually been holding back because management told you to not show your sports knowledge. You didn't want to show up. Myself and Justin and Sam Panionovich and everybody else who talks sports around here. And so you've laid in the weeds like a great teammate. Today's and tonight's your night to come on out. And so, you know, I'm not playing around anymore.
Right. It's free agency, NBA free agency day. So you got to be ready.
I know what that means. So we're good to go.
Yes, you do. You're very upset that Etuan Moore is going to the New Orleans Pelicans.
That's come on, crazy. Etuan. There's a team called the Pelicans.
That's cool.
The best thing that I didn't learn just now.
Have you ever been to New Orleans?
No, I would like to go.
Well, see, there you go. You could go to New Orleans, take it in, and see the Pelicans all in one fell swoop.
Sure, I would totally do that.
What are you guys talking about besides the 2 hours of NBA talk?
Well, we're going to address what's going to happen this weekend, which is the city's going to explode, for real. And, I just think this is the worst weekend of the year.
And I disagree with that.
You do.
I think it's the best weekend of the year.
Yeah, so we have that going on. We're also going to delve into the CARE profile tonight at 1 a.m. Justin, I know you'll be listening.
I will, yeah.
Cooperators, analyzers, energizers, regulators, what are you, your personality type, how do you use that to accelerate your life, make more money, connect better with the special people in your life. Yeah. So that's going on. And then,
Man, very Tony Robbins. Yeah. I like it. I'm all jacked up already.
See?
And we have a comedy team coming in at 11:30, and they celebrate stories of shame and embarrassment and make us happy to talk about the times that we felt super weird.
I like that. That's a good way to use comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatable because we've all felt awkward and weird and embarrassed.
Yes.
I'm thinking about sharing some vulnerable stuff there, but I haven't completely...
Yeah.
You haven't bought into it yet?
I mean, am I really going back to the clown that I was in 7th grade and junior high? I'm not sure that I'm doing that, but I think I'll probably do it. I think I'm going
to
do it.
All right, then you have to stay tuned. Carm and Rachel coming up here on WGN Radio. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Have a good show, guys.
Thanks,
Thanks.